Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Honourable Member. We are very grateful to the presentation to yourself so that you can know what the Rhode Island Museum is doing. And my name is Naledi Sisi. I am the chairperson of the Rhode Island Museum Council. And on my left,
Madam Victor Randall, I'm a council member.
My name is Shoni Kambara. I'm the senior manager of marketing at the Rhode Island Museum.
My name is Walter Ben. I'm the product and public safety unit manager at the Rhode Island Museum.
My name is Jennifer Scott.
My name is Ntsepong Langa, and from the government. We have with us a presentation that we said we would go to subject to the chair's advice on this, because probably what we like is very likely to have lectures. Thank you very much.
My name is Kavala Tondashe, Parliamentary Officer, Minister's Office. Morning, members. My name is Nkatele Sonjika, Parliamentary Officer in the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Our
speaker.
Good morning, I am Nikki von Flair, the Parliamentary Researcher for Arts and Culture.
The two people are moving around, the secretary and he and the assistant, that is Bulela and the new Babano.
My name is Peter Malaka, I'm a member of the committee.
From which province?
I'm from Hong Kong.
My name is Kata, a member of the committee from the Northwest Province.
This is Bruno from Badula
Natal. From Hong Kong Province.
The Opperman from the Klein Kar River in the Western Cape.
Mupe Lumina, I'm really one of the committee.
Levo Chirante, the chairperson of this portfolio committee from the Great Limpopo. Thank you. CEO, you are welcome, maybe for the gathering information. That Kangari is my former student. He was a genius boy like you. I believe you were also enjoying him.
Yeah.
It's a good product, ne?
Yes.
Thank you very much. I think talking to your presentation is not a thing, rather than reading word by word.
Okay.
We would like to listen to whatever you brought us, your budget and your whatever you want to tell us, we are very ready to listen to what you'll be telling us.
Okay.
For the day. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Over to our presenter.
Firstly, I believe there are documents which contain various levels of information which needs to be introduced or rather be understood so that where they fit in as far as our presentation is concerned, that people need to know that. So I'm not sure whether those have been distributed to all people around the table as yet.
Chair, we have this presentation in front of us. I don't know who does not have one, but we have given you the comprehensive document of our strategy plan and budget. Probably who does not have our presentation will then distribute Yeah.
And the ICMP.
And then the other one that we have done, we have taken the ICMP, Integrated Conservation Management Plan document. This is an abridged version. So we have given to every member. So the real strategy of what we have today, Green, will be based on the Integrated Conservation Management Plan. The final end, what we have finally done, is to make a full assessment of financial projections, besides the limitations of what normally government would give. But we said, let's take the overall picture, and then we'll give it to you as a presentation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. My emphasis this morning would be on sharing you the space in as far as mainly the natural side of things is concerned, but also obviously looking at some of the cultural aspects. This really is the overview in terms of the outlook of the island. These are some of the geographical information in terms of the size of the space, which I'm sure you are familiar with. But otherwise, the place is 9.6 kilometers north of Greenpoint, on the mainland, covering an area of about 518 hectares. It measures roughly 3.5 kilometers from north to south. I'm sure there are other important dimensions, but nonetheless, that is just to give you a bit of an overview. Some of the interesting features of the environment really is the diversity of the environment. We call this place a museum, but I think we need to appreciate that it is not your usual museum where you go in and look at collections from a glass window. We have here an environment which covers such places as a village, a whole village of people. And that village also includes such things as a creche, a school, a shop. We've got a clinic. We've got a fully functional post office. We've got, obviously, other features such as the graveyard, the gun emplacements, the power stations, the desalination plant, the churches, and, of course, you've got a landing strip there. Quite a bit of an activities of helicopter landings from time to time. We've got a full transport yard, which has got vehicles on the island, which are also, you know, complemented by fully functional diesel and petrol tanks on such an environment, which is called a museum. Obviously, you have the jetties, you've got the Murray's Bay Harbor, you've got the Old Fora Jetty, and in terms of the prison component, you've got basically five different types of prisons on the island. Of course, you also have the natural environment, which includes all the fauna and the flora. You have other components, such as, for example, your lighthouse, which was built in the 1800s, installed then, and is still fully functional, and that is under the management of Portnet. One of the most popular features, obviously, is the maximum security prison, which was built by common law prisoners in 1964, and obviously it continues to be one of the main, mostly renowned features in terms of what the island is all about. But from what I've shared with you already, I think at this stage you would appreciate that the place is much more than about the maximum security prison itself. This is the landing strip. As you can see, it functions, but I'm sure you would agree with me that that is not what you expect of a landing strip. Now, in terms of the presentation that I'm going to give to you, basically the key issues that I want to address here is, how does the ICMP fit in with the natural environment? Obviously, the ICMP also talks to the cultural environment. The other issue is the status of the natural environment. Particularly, I think, interestingly, you would have picked up very recently about the whole status of the fauna, the antelopes, and all that. That will be of interest to you. But one would like to basically touch a little bit on those issues, and particularly looking at what are some of the current challenges in terms of that, and also, what are RIM's management underlying principles or approach with respect to the natural environment? I think that is quite important that you know that much as we are a cultural heritage site, the fact that we've got a natural environment means that we definitely have to have a position as to.
I would like to advise you at least to be aware of time.
Okay.
That you'll be given 20 minutes to present or whatever you'll be presenting. And, the deliberation through the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sure 20 minutes is more than sufficient for the presentation. Okay. Having said that, one would like to talk about where the ICMP fits in. I think you have the document in front of you. This is actually an abridged version of the ICMP. There is a fully comprehensive document which talks to issues in detail, which also has got an operational plan, which also includes the budget. But very briefly, some of the objectives, and I will not really spend much time on each and every one of them, some of the objectives of the ICMP are covered in this bullet point. Significantly, really, we're looking at having a mandate as Robben Island Museum Management to try and retain the significance of the heritage resource. I won't treat each and everyone as they stand there, but basically the ICMP has got those specific key objectives that it tries to cover. And very briefly, the overview of the chapters of the ICMP. The first chapter looks at the significance of the island in terms of the multi-layered history. And the second chapter assesses the significance of Robben Island. With a multi-layered history, you have to respect and to understand that you've got the historical, the social space, the natural environment itself. So the second chapter looks at the assessing of the significance. Then you've got the different layers in terms of the cultural setting, the cemeteries, the graves, the kramas, the churches, political imprisonment landscape, which are quite key in terms of the cultural component. And then you look at Chapter 4, which really examines the way in which the different occupations of the island over time have impacted on the physical and built environment. It's also quite important that the island can be compared with other similar sites around the world, and therefore Chapter 5 also looks at how the island compares with other sites of similar features, although it's unique in its character, but certainly it's important to look at similar sites around the world. Then the issue of relevant legislations in terms of the management of the island, which are quite a number of legislations that actually impact on the whole management of the island. So there's also a chapter that looks at that. Then the issue of conservation policies and principles, which are covered on Chapter 7, and then the interpretation of the space, followed by the vista management plan, key issues and opportunities, and as I said, there will also be the operational plan that looks at how do we then deal with a whole number of issues and priorities that have been identified in the ICMP itself. So in short, you do have the abbreviated version of the ICMP. The most important thing with the ICMP is to appreciate that before the museum was declared as a World Heritage Site, it was supposed to have had the ICMP in the first place. We worked over the past few years producing the ICMP, something that we should have had in the first place. The World Heritage Committee does have provisions to allow sites to be nominated and listed without necessarily having met that mandate. So the fact that we've got an ICMP means that we are now, for the first time, fully meeting the requirements of being a World Heritage Site, because we've got a plan in place which has been endorsed by the government of South Africa, which says this is our commitment to managing the space, and this is how we're going to manage the space. Like any other plan, it obviously needs to be implemented, and implementation also comes with the need for those resources. But we will touch on that one a bit later. I think I need to say that the ICMP itself also talks to the need to look after the natural environment. Much as Robben Island Museum's main reasons for being declared a World Heritage Site was for cultural-related reasons, but the ICMP, amongst other issues, has got programs that looks at how the natural environment needs to be looked at. It looks at the whole issue of the need to re-establish the gardens and greening of the spaces, the need to clear dense alien vegetation, the need to look after the penguin population, which is one of the largest penguin colonies in the world, and the need to continue to look at the control of the numbers in terms of what we call problem animals in terms of the environment. Those things are already articulated in the ICMP itself. I think it is also important to let you know that the ICMP has been endorsed and has been acknowledged by the World Heritage Committee. It was tabled last year in July in New Zealand. And these are some of the initial reactions that we got from the World Heritage Committee when we tabled Robben Island Museum ICMP, because it had been a long-standing component for us for a long time. The Director General of the World Heritage Center said, "I would like to congratulate Robben Island Museum for having responded to the recommendations of the World Heritage Committee that outlined the necessity to update the management plan of the site, which was inscribed on the World Heritage Site list in 1999. He further said he was pleased to note the commitment of the authorities to establish a strategy for a comprehensive management plan that has considered altogether the main components of the property, namely the maximum security prison, the Sobukwe complex, the quarries, the cemeteries, the shipwrecks, and importantly, the natural environment. And I particularly mentioned this in terms of some of the issues that we've been facing from a natural point of view, to say that we are committed, and the ICMP also says that the natural environment is quite critical. Also of importance was the participatory nature that was followed by Robben Island Museum in terms of coming up with our ICMP, which is also quite a critical aspect when you produce an ICMP. It's not a matter of some few experts getting together and writing a full document without consulting with other key and interested or affected stakeholders in the country. So that was also quite acknowledged, that it was quite an involving process to come up with our ICMP. Looking at the state of the environment at the moment, I think some of these numbers could be of interest to you. We do have the antelope population. Looking at, I mean, one can never be 100% accurate sometimes in approximating these animals, but this is really more or less what you're looking at in terms of the antelope population currently at the moment. 15 springbok, 100 steenbok, 1 eland, 200 European fallow deer, 2 pontebok, 4,000 population of rabbits. And of course, we've got other fauna on the island, the ostriches, we've got penguins, we've got black oyster catchers, which is an endangered bird species found on the island. Okay, just for an indication, you know, the pontebok population, the penguins, the African penguins colony, the black oyster catchers. Okay. Some of the things that has happened in terms of the natural environment. Last year, 54 pontebok were captured and relocated from the island. Okay. And my understanding is the intention was to reduce the fallow deer to a group of at least 10 manageable individuals. As you can see, that number is quite high as we speak. And also, one of the intentions was to drastically remove the rabbit population as well and continue with the eradication of the feral cat. So in terms of where we stand at the moment, I think you would agree with me that one of the biggest challenges currently at the moment is the whole issue of overpopulation of some of these animals, especially the so-called problem animals as well. So in short then, current challenges in terms of the natural environment is that there isn't enough natural felt at this stage for the antelope. There's excessive numbers of fallow deer, excessive numbers of rabbits, large pile of dry wood, and the dense alien vegetation. And as I said earlier on, the problem of those problem animals. And some of the options in terms of dealing with some of these issues at the moment, I think you might be aware that we are also doing supplementary feeding of these animals, quite an expensive and difficult process at times, because some of them do not necessarily want to eat, you know, artificial feed, like I think the pontebok in this situation. And of course, there are some of the inevitable options, such as having to cull some of these animal populations, such as the fallow deer, the rabbits. Now, interestingly, in the past, things, I suppose, were much easier. The environmental regimes and legislations were not that difficult. You know, the waders would easily just go into the felt and, you know, shoot and for hunting for pleasure and all that sort of thing. I suppose, in terms of that, it would be easy. No controversies and no one complaining, no SPCA. You know, the waders just go in and do as they please. And of course, in terms of some of the vegetation, and the whole issue of looking at how the residents could use wood, and of course also how to take out that wood to the mainland, looking at some creative options there. One of the options is obviously to rehabilitate some of the exposed area. Now, with respect to alien vegetation, I think we need to appreciate that some of these trees are still used by the very species of animals in some respect that we would like to protect. In this case, the birds, for example, which use some of these alien trees to nest. So it might not necessarily be feasible to try and remove each and every alien species on the island. So in short, what we're saying is with respect to the problem animals, I think culling has been recognized as one of those options which we cannot run away from, especially with respect to these animal types that one has put here on this slide. So what are we saying, basically? I think from a natural side of things, although one hasn't touched so much on the cultural, we are saying that we are committed and we believe that the environment is crucial to our significance. There is one of these wise words that I once came across, which says that nature takes no account of even the most reasonable human excuses. So we could have all these excuses that, the rabbit population went so high and, you know, how could it not have rained and all that kind of thing. But nature takes no account of even the most reasonable human excuses. We also believe very strongly that the ICMP is quite instrumental in the long-term management of the place. Much as, yes, we produce the ICMP as part and parcel of meeting the requirements and the needs of the World Heritage Committee, I personally believe that even without a World Heritage status, the ICMP is a must for us as South Africans to have a document like that, a plan like that, which demonstrates our commitment to look after the place for generations and generations to come. So it is quite a key document. It is not necessarily to impress, you know, the outside world. It is an imperative insofar as we are concerned. But as one has said, adequate funding is critical for the management of both the cultural and natural landscape. I think at this stage, I would like to give over to the CEO to address some of the key imperatives with respect to the funding needs and other mandates of Robben Island. Thank you.
Are we standing with time, Madam Chair? Otherwise, questions can always fit and we can fit answers. Are we still fine with... Okay. We have inherited, Madam Chair, a correctional services infrastructure and a place. Later, it was then termed and given a good name, museum. It means we inherited the water, the houses, the animals, the buses, the graves, the grammars, the shops, the swimming pool, the rest. But what we have now assessed, we are a city in the middle of the water, and the world is outside us. It means it was a place of banishment. There was a purpose for why people should be there. But it's also a city. When you look into it, it's complete infrastructure, like you got to have a small satellite police station, you got to have your rent collected, you get to have your house maintained, your roads, infrastructure, your boats. It means there are different units, which in a final analysis, it will be said, they will be under the management. But once you go outside the Robben Island into a main municipality, you will find departments that really take care of those profiled assessments. So that's one problem we are sitting with. We also inherited, when it was said it must become a museum, it meant there was no budget that was put into it. We absorbed the correctional services budget with an inflation of 5% as it is going up. So that's another dynamic that we have inherited. And thirdly, Madam Chair, was that in a final analysis, it's a situation that you are looking into a development of a structure, development of an area, which assessment has to be done. But it's now 10 years. The 10 years assessment says to us, how then do you grow this first phase of 1 to 3 years? These are phases. Now we are at that stage where we are looking face to face with reality that says, is our budget right? For example, the argument that council puts to us flatly and to everybody is that, do you manage it right? Do you have the tools to run with the infrastructure? So I think that is where we are critically crippled. Besides being in the water, you will have to survive. Besides being in the water, you have all the infrastructure. But those are the greatest challenges. We can talk to them at a later stage. But we're just bringing all those three scenarios, that in the water infrastructure, together with the logistics of how you need to accommodate your setup as an institution, and thirdly, what are the tools, necessary tools, like budgetary concern that you need to have on the basis of making sure that Robben Island is a living museum, and at the same time, it relates the history of what pain has been into the space to the rest of the country. Thank you very much. No, we are fine, Madam Chair. Actually, these slides are just indicating a deviation of unfunded mandates. For example, we were putting it so that people could be aware. If you are dealing with the municipalities, what we are saying in summary form is that you have your waste removal. And in ordinary area, you'll find the trucks and all the logistics that relates to that. Water, you'll find electricity. We are running the space with generators. Of course, if Cape Town wants us to help, we can do that. We supply 850 kilowatts with one power engine. We've got four engines, and then of course with our desalination plant, we also put up an engine that looks into the three reserve tanks. So what is key? What we're trying to say, Madam Chair, is that. If you go up, Matima. If you go to water and forestry affairs, we've got the forest there, and then we've got the water system there. But you know, it has to be looked upon on the basis of a small budget. Government gives us a 42 million budget. But you'll find that the rest of that money, 1.9, goes to salaries. Then the rest you'll have to survive, probably from your ticket sales, the tourists, from what you'll get from the shop, from what you'll have from the space. So it's a fundamental. We believe this committee, we are at the right hand to say we have frustration, we have our problems, but somewhere we got to alleviate our problems. Now, if you go to challenges of the World Heritage Convention, and then if you go to the archives, you will notice that archives in the country are given a budget on particular specifics because they are archival institutions. We have the archives, and then we have the museum, and we have the village, we have transport, and all those are not really budgeted for insofar as the budget of the country is concerned. Now, this is just a breakdown of saying, if you look into our ferry operations, for example, we've got five old historic vessels, then with the new one. I know media likes a new one. So the area is, the five historic vessels, one, if you look into, we've got only one cargo vessel that has to transport. If you say you need water, you need to go to mainland, it must bring water off. If you say diesel, it must go to, and it is over 60 years old. The good history about that heritage artifact is that when you look into our pictures in Robben Island, it used to carry over 1,000 prisoners over. And then when you look into the license today, it was supposed to have only carried 14 passengers. So now this is a good artifact and a historical vessel. But it's only one. It's only 60 years old. Once it gets a breakdown, then we have to hire services from the marine. And the marines to just take diesel over will cost you 45,000 rand. Because you're in the middle of the water. And then if you are to take petrol or whatever car or cargo that needs to go over, you have to spend on that. So those are unfunded mandates that you normally would find managing. And then above all, you've got your own Susan Kruger, which is quite an old boat. Of course, we sit with a big argument that says, why do you keep Susan Kruger there? You know, we said this is the history of the country. We are heritage. You know, we've got to store, reserve, and preserve the history. So this is what John was saying. Those are mandates that definitely you need to fulfill from the World Heritage Site. But at the same time, these are added responsibilities now on a basis. You'll have to maintain this old cargo ship, these old diaz, and then they are maintained at a cost because they're not old. They are very old. And the spare parts, definitely we have to get them from as far as Germany because this is where they were born, and as far as the USA because some of the parts came from there. To bring them down here, I'm telling you an example that it says you have a problem with your gearbox. They then say 150,000 rand, you got a gearbox. So those are the challenges that you sit with on this place. And the tourist destination, of course, there would be a different mandates that you will find from your department. You've got DIT, which part and parcel of their responsibility will be to look into the tourism section. Then, of course, we are under arts and culture. Yes. I think those are the other issues that we definitely, in this coming 10 years, we'll have to put a streamline on that. Yes. In short, Madam Chair, towards the end, take the next slide. In short, I think the chairperson has passion when it comes to our operational budget and the other integrated conservation CAPEX project, as we were saying. Probably if you want to say something there, it will be there. It's just that we need to look into the coming 10 years with a different eye. The responsibility of the museum is for all of us, media involved. The pain and the history that is in that space is our pain, it's our history. I think we need to put more heads together so then we are able not only to sit somewhere far away and look into problems inside, but where we'll establish a relationship that says, Langa, there's a problem here. Why can't we try it towards the left? Because it's our history, it's our pain, it's our space. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Of attraction where our history lies really. Which one believes that we have the private sector as part of people who can sort of like generate money through the very same island we're talking about. I'm just entertaining myself. That what contribution do private sectors do have to organize? Like we know that a lot of departments are very involved. They're part and parcel to make sure that at least women are left behind, not other culture only. So I would like to thank you very much for giving this opportunity to Honorable Madam to praise our presence of that. But I must also say to you, if you always ask for all people involved to put our heads together and you keep on denying your problems, and it's not easy to actually work with you. And I must say, through you, Chair, that, and I've got a few of the clips here, six of them, and there are many more in the office, that there's always a denial when there's problems. And the issue on the fauna issues that you've raised, they were warned 3 years ago, and I do not believe to the Honourable Gentleman who did the presentation when I walked in, that if you cannot do a count of your fauna accurately, there are game farms in this country, billion times almost bigger than Robben Island, and they can do accurate counts. I do not think that is a good thing to say.
you don't have the world in that space. You should be able, unless you tell us that the staff is supposed to do it, is not able to do their job. I don't think we must come to a committee and estimate or think that everybody sitting here has never been on a game pump or can't do stock control and all those things. I actually would like you to explain to us what you are actually doing to from now on to implement a better strategy to make sure that we will never ever lose this status that we have, the World Heritage status. Because the way we are going, we're not going to make it. The issue that we had on the ferry that could not take people to the most important heritage tourist site in this country failed hundreds of tourists December a year ago. And what are we doing to prevent that? If you want to involve the city, great. But you cannot put all the blame at the city. You cannot blame all the old boats. And when I walked in, CEO, you started off by saying the current challenges you inherited. Your words were you inherited from correctional services. May I ask you how long ago did you inherit from correctional services? I don't believe it was yesterday or last year. So if you inherited all these bad things, how long ago and what plans have you made to correct this? Because I'm sure the minister, with the help of this committee, can actually get interest to say that World Heritage site that we have as an asset to the whole of the country with its bad and sad history and everybody that wants to go there. I mean, we mustn't underestimate the value of that site. And we cannot always come negative to this committee and just give challenges and never ever implement. I'm not talking about writing it in your book. I'm talking about really implementing to actually save it properly. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, the CEO of the museum is asking for more money. You will remember that one of the problems we had last time was the whole issue of the financial management of this project. I want to know what is in place to assure the country and the people of this country that you will improve with the management of the finances that will be entrusted.
All this, all we are only getting the budget from the Department of Arts and Culture.
Thank you. The update of President, I don't know whether that's been done for us. Can anyone respond? How much do you do?
Can
jointly take the first. We jointly take the first. Madam Chair, I think all questions from the members are genuine. I was just reminded in my mind when we had SPCA, we really not try to be defensive, no way. We will try to be as outspoken as much as possible. When we had SPCA with us, we were killing cats. We then asked the question, you are professional people, go to the field, how many cats do we have? They said 68. I said, fine. So let's then start trapping. And we will start shooting everything. They said, no, no, you cannot shoot cats. We will trap them. No problem. That took us 3 months. After 3 months, we only managed to catch 4 cats out of 68. We then said, okay, fine. Why don't we use both methods? We trap and we shoot. They agreed. Finally, after 3 months. It's painful exercise, Madam Chair. You have to go through emotions of people, the cat lovers, and at the same time, you've got an environmental problem of an impact. We managed to grapple with those cats up until they were 12. We discovered there are 117. That's what we are saying. It's not an easy issue to count animals. The rabbits, the same. They are underground. We have counted and estimated 4,000 rabbits. It might be more, but at least we are somewhere with the number. All what we're trying to say, we admit we can never be accurate people when it comes to those issues. Yes, we agree with you that there are specialists with the game range and stuff. Probably there's one idea we can adopt from the meeting to involve some of those, because we've got some. Suntech is with us, and they're always with us in this meeting. But what I'm saying is not an easy one, but at least we know the numbers of what we have seen with our own eyes. We're not trying to be defensive. Madam Chair. The status, Robben Island heritage status, it's a process. The requirement which the World Heritage Site demanded was that you've got to have a document that talks into the space endorsed by this convention. We said it's 3 years, grapple with it. The international assistance person from UNESCO came down, 3 years. We finally have a document called Integrated Conservation Management Plan, which also has action plan at the back. So that's the program we're implementing. Now, at some stage, we had 21 points which we were dealing with, on basis of, they were saying, we've got to look into the blue stone quarry, the lime quarry, because as you driving through the quarry, the fumes from the buses, they started to indicate a black stuff on top. So we then have to build a road that goes closer to the quarry so that we stop buses from getting into the quarry. So we have done a lot of measures there, Madam Chair. If you come to water, there's no water in Robben Island, but we've managed to build up a desalination plant. We can supply families now with water. There's only brown water that we find in Robben Island. We've got 3 dams. We now can supply. We've got reserves even for fire breaks in case there is an emergency around those areas. That's what we've done. But as the one speaker was saying, we still need more assistance because that's a big challenge. That's a city. Now, we are not blaming the city, really, Madam Chair, but we are saying, city, where are you? Where would you assist? Island is an island in the middle. It's west today. It's very dry this year, very dry. Only the fittest survive. It's very dry. We don't want to say that, but it's very tight. It's one tight season. Even when prisoners were there before, one time there was one such a drought which they even stopped playing football themselves. They said, we want to make sure that we get some rain, we wait for some water, so then our grass could start growing. You saw in the picture, it's green. But you go there, it's at the table, because it's the dry season. It's in the middle of the water. It's quite a hectic situation. Now, my colleague wanted to add something. But very December, Madam Chair, genuine, old historic Susan Kruger, and old Penguin, and the old Diaz, they gave up. Because they're old. And we finally appealed to government. Can't government give us money to buy at least a ferry that will be more efficient to take us in time going over and take more people? They only take 134%. And then with the restriction that we have to keep a space for 14%. We finally managed and endorsed, and council is here. We got a ship now that takes 300 people. It's working. That as long as Ireland you don't have an anchor ship, you are in problems. Now, we then have to improve on what you have given us, Madam Chair, that we should improve on. We have asked for a ship, it's there. That's our anchor ship that could be, of, in case of emergency, it's able to sleep on the island. By the way, babies get born on the island in the middle of the night. Then there's no hospital. You'll have to do an emergency trip to take them back to the mainland. So we are not crying, Madam, but we are saying this is the reality of our friends. The 25 million has always been our problem. We are hunted every time. 25 million. Now, this was a deficit. To go over Robben Island, we make a small sum. If you take four trips a day, Madam Chair, you then load or you take over people with the Sea Princess. Sea Princess can only take 145%. If you say there is no boat day today, it means it's 145 times four, no money that day. Because Mr. Weather has decided that he doesn't want to see any port going over. So it's not our fault. It's a natural area. So if swells are high, you cannot risk anybody's life to take over. We also submit ourselves to Mother Nature and say, we will wait until next time. The unfortunate part is that happened for 65 days, the whole year when we count. If you count that for 65 days, it tells you how much money you have lost. One tourist coming to us, it means we pay 150, he's able to buy water, he's able to buy a T-shirt. If completely no tourist is coming, there's no skipper port, no water port, nothing. So we then wrote a letter to government. We said our colleagues, on the basis of the budget projections, have said this is what we're going to achieve. We cannot reach that scale. The reason being, we are out of commission on this number of days, and then we can see we are going to be having a deficit of 25 million. We wrote the letter. Of course, media is here, would back us up. We said what we are going to, a deficit is going to come up. So I think that is what happened. Now, unfortunately, is that when interpretation of the deficit comes, it sometimes sounds like somebody has stolen 25 million or so. But it's just an image which we all need to correct together with our media colleagues, together with all citizens in the country on basis of effect. That was a deficit. So on the basis of unfunded mandates, we only have two entry points ourselves as a museum into government. One point is to talk to DIT. The anchor point we talk to this commission. Art and culture. Now, we would then expect a coordination of those efforts from the governmental level and ourselves. But to be very genuine and honest, we have never gone to Portnet to say, help us on a budget on the basis of this. Because really, our delegated mandate is direct to DAC, and at the same time, administratively is DIT. But the point that, Councillor, you are raising, this is what we need to really request. Because all the budget you are looking at, if the public works takes their own share of what they need to maintain, if Portnet takes their own share, if DIT takes their own share, if education, we've got education and a kindergarten there, if they take their own portion and say, we as education will take over from that, we as DIT will take over from that, I'm sure we can live with a trimmed budget, but we've delegated the responsibilities on all those unfunded mandates. I think it's an advice, quite genuinely, to us. We appreciate it. That could be tried. That could be done. In the coming 10 years, if we plan to go towards that route, we'll also need your assistance towards that area. Can I breathe a little bit and leave to my colleagues? It's painful to deal with Robben Island situation.
Well, I think most of the questions have been covered by the CEO as far as I wanted to intervene. The whole issue of me saying that, you know, one cannot count this accurately. I'm not a scientist or a conservationist myself. It is really just a personal assumption. I just thought it must be quite difficult to count these animals. I mean, I just think about the rabbits, which are in the numbers of like 4,000. One would think that much as you're culling one or three or two tonight, within a space of 2 weeks, one or three or four has been born, you know. So I just thought it's my own assumption. Maybe indeed the numbers that I showed are accurate.
Point of order, can I just say, anybody knows you can't accurately count a rabbit and a cat, but the other animals can be counted.
Okay, I don't know for sure myself, so excuse my own ignorance in that. I've never counted them, and I don't know how to count them. But the other issue with respect to, tourists and the ferries, I think that we are doing our best at the moment to make sure that we have got sufficient capacity, particularly to deal with the peak season. But I think inevitably, my own assumption is that much as we would love everybody to find themselves on Robben Island, I think that they would, one way or another, be always constrained of some kind when it comes to ferry capacity. Tourism has been growing quite a lot in South Africa. In fact, South Africa has been one of the most growing tourism recipients in the world. So from a ferry capacity point of view, I'm afraid we will never be 100% with that one. But certainly, we are doing our best, and we've realized that the old ferries cannot be relied on like we almost tried to do about 2 years ago. On the issue of how the inability to take tourists over to the island would affect the World Heritage Site status, if I understood that correctly, I think that that one is just an unfortunate one, because Robben Island just happens to be also a very popular tourist destination. But certainly our World Heritage mandate is not necessarily connected to our ability to entertain the tourism mandate on its own. One saying that doesn't mean that one is saying that it is not important, because certainly it is not a good image for us to be unable to take tourists over to the island. We would love to meet the tourism mandate. We would love to provide the best possible service. We would love to provide the best possible facilities. And I think we are continuously striving to achieve that. From a management point of view, I think what one needs to also acknowledge is that for almost the past 2 years, if I'm correct, but it's certainly more than a year, we did not have a council. And I think that really put a little bit of a strain on management, as obviously we had to deal with all sorts of things, never mind just the operational issues, but the strategic issues. I think one has to acknowledge and say that we have a council now. Part of the burdens of sharing the responsibility of helping to ensure the management of the place, the strategic issues, and the various mandates is going to be much more streamlined now. And one can feel that things are much, much, much better, that we've got a council to give us guidance and, on a number of things. Not that we have not been working because we didn't have a council, but one at least needs to acknowledge that the absence of the council for a period of over a year has
the area of, there are people yet living on the island, Madam Chair. There are families living on the island. We've got about population of about 112 families that are living there for various reasons and services. You have your PW people who stand there for emergency. We've got generators, and they also look after the space for maintenance. You've also got the lighthouse, the oldest that Shoni has shown. It's also maintained, especially at night, because around our area, you notice there are 31 shipwrecks. If that lighthouse can go down, it can cause a little bit of havoc, especially to the marine world. Of course, there are other service providers, like the people who are doing cleaning on Southern Island, the people who are doing security. We've got security companies. Then for them to be, for space to be guarded, for a number of reasons, that you'll have to have some of those services provided on the island. And there is also a complement of our staff that stays there. In case you have your first ferry coming in the morning, and on the tourism section, which they have to start being active from 7:30. So they stay there. And the majority of those people, of course, they stay with their spouses. Yes, we have the population that stays there. We have a small clinic also. There are people who do standby. It's just on clinic services, you know, if there is any need of a process of a problem to help before you go to a major one. We also have them there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Maybe before, I don't know whether my question was really responded to as far as the private sector are concerned. I want to be able to
get it done. Okay, Chair, will you come?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Let me just, from the side of Council, indicate that the deterioration and the deterioration of Rhode Island as a museum was the government function. And its inscription by UNESCO as a World Heritage Site was also another important declaration. So what the Council has said, Madam Chair, and this is in response to your question in part, is that every single government entity does need to be looked at and all its functions appropriately analyzed, and therefore the requisite competences determined so that we can effectively and appropriately say what would be the budget required to effectively and efficiently run this institution. That is a very, very critical element in the whole matter. With regard to Rowan Island, this was not properly done from day one. There was no appropriate analysis of the functions Rowan Island might serve and what are the core areas, what are the add-ons which have been there because it was a prison, and many of those elements which were related to prison were just passed on to the museum without bringing on board the requisite budget to take care of those elements. That's what the CEO refers to as unfunded mandate. That is what the board, the council discovered when it took over as council a few months ago. We are a relatively new council. We discovered that there are far too many elements that we are actually funding from the heritage budget of about 40-odd million rand, which is essentially geared at looking at the salaries of staff. So council took a position that says we need to review this. We need to discuss with the ministry and all the stakeholders. We need to say, can we unbundle all these elements that do not belong to the heritage function? Can they go to the various core competence departments that should actually deal with them? For instance, why should Rowan Island be running clinics? It does not have that capacity, nor that budget. The health department should deal with clinics. Why should Rowan Island be running education, a preschool and the education of students and young people on the island? That is the function of the Department of Education, who must provide the requisite budget for that. You have got the issue of water on Rowan Island. The municipality, what is its role? To what extent does it ensure that we have got
proper water for the residents of Robben Island or whoever has been Robben Island, both the people and the animals. What happens with roads and transport? In which way is the Department of Transport involved in this process? In which way is the municipality engaged in this process to ensure that those services are provided? If people who stay there have to pay the rates and taxes, so be it, provided they are also remunerated in accordance with the tasks they perform. And it cannot, however, be an excuse that says the municipality should not fulfill its responsibilities and obligations with regard to a place that falls within its realm. So we need to look at that. We have already engaged with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, and they are quite happy to come to the party to assist not only in terms of provision of appropriate heritage expertise, which we lack desperately on Robben Island presently. It's a competence that is critical for the continuation and retaining of our status as a World Heritage Site. Without the requisite competence with regard to conservation and the proper running of a museum, we could lose our status. The Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism is happy to come to the party with a budget to assist in this process. We have not specified figures, but they are happy to come there and say, we believe we've got a duty to actually carry out there. We are happy to come there. We need the other departments, health, education, water affairs, public works, because there must be continuous attention to the built environment, given the erosive nature of the climate there, given the aging element and all other factors. You require the Public Works Department not to come and utilize the limited Robben Island heritage targeted budget, but to come with its own budget, a consolidated budget that says, we as the Department of Public Works are going to provide this budget to build this building, to secure the prison here, to deal with this threat, and so on and so forth. So that all elements, or because of the nature of Robben Island, you require the cooperative and collaborative engagement of all relevant government departments, including the municipality. It is within this context, then, with that duty carried out, as this is a government monument, it's a national museum. It is not a private entity, Madam Chair, it is a national museum. The government said, we recognize this as a national museum in as much as we recognize the Freedom Park, which was funded for about 500 million, and others. Just to conclude, Madam Chair, so that we can be able to give a comprehensive picture of what the government is doing. We are actually prepared to go back, and we are looking at strategies of fundraising from the private sector. But in order to do this, we are also looking at the restructuring of the Robben Island Museum as a heritage site, primarily, and also ensuring that we engage the appropriate skills to run with the various elements of heritage, which do not necessarily exist in the entirety of the island. So we are looking at a restructuring and reorganization of an island, and we are looking at engaging, of course, with the media to be able to say, these are the things that we are looking at, and to engaging with the public and stakeholders to say, what are other elements that we need to look at and to take corrective action. So we want to make it a public interactive process that brings on board the views and ideas of a whole variety of people who are interested in conserving, preserving, and uplifting Robben Island, not just one involved with it.
Thank you very much. Honourable
Panel, followed by Honourable Mbombo. Thank you, Chair. I thought we were answering questions and not in another presentation, but may I just say to the gentleman from the Council, not the first time Robben Island actually appeared for this committee, it's the fifth time since I'm here. And we actually, Chair, but I can't understand is why now do we involve other departments? All the entities of this department are engaging with others. I'll give a recent example. We went to the Afrikaans Taal Museum and they have problems with a lift for people with disabilities. And they are engaging with public works for a long time. So nowhere are entities where there are cross-border department-wide need to discuss, are people being stopped to do it? So it's your duty as the museum to do that ever since, not suddenly. Chair, I would like to know, there was, obviously, if you get services from the municipality, we don't deal with the municipality here, surely you would pay for those services, like members of parliament and staff living in Arcadia Park are paying for their rent and in life. So it's just, you know, that's how it works in life. Can I just ask, there was an investigation in Robben Island of money that was lost in the shop, I think it was last year. What happened to that investigation? Is it concluded?
It's a good question, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the fortunate part would be Madam Chair, I was saying the fortunate part is all other museums and the archival institutions, they are on the mainland. If there was a lift, for example, in Robben Island, if you were to look for any space for that lift, it's not our core function, but you'll have to take a boat, a cargo boat, go over to Cape Town, buy a spare and bring it over. That's what makes us very unique with other museums. And it is precisely on that reason that the question that follows from Mama to say, what about other religious beliefs? How do you cater for them? It's still not our core function, but also our people are Christian, some are Muslims. I'll cite one example. When a baby is born, they are assembled in one good church of Leopard, and they will all ring a bell and celebrate somebody is born. That's community involvement, social relationships, but still not our mandate, Madam Chair. But what is unique, people know who they believe to, I would think. And the biggest area also of our history is that we have the grammar. People with that particular type of religion, they can buy the whole two ferries and come over. What it means to the residents and the population around, the boats are full that day because you can only take a particular number to go over. So we have those challenges, Madam Chair, that we have. But at least insofar as people's beliefs, they really come to their beliefs because this is what they believe in. God is the answer in their processes. The last question, the unfunded mandate. The council has started a process, as the chairperson was indicating. They have clearly applied their mind and they have identified our problem. We were just sitting with a problem ourselves. But they said, guys, this is not your mandate. We got as council to go to the Department of Health. They have started a process now to say to the Department of Health, because, you know, if anything happens in Robben Island, if somebody dies there because of negligence of a nurse, we've got a nurse, again, we will be attacked by our own fellow counterparts. So, council, we applied their mind and they definitely took a resolution and a decision that says all non-core functions of the institution, responsibilities, has to be brought closer those doors. And discussions are starting as I'm talking. So I think on the basis of health, probably at a later stage, the chair is here. They would then say how far is the process and then where are they starting the other areas. But we are quite thrilled ourselves that they have identified an area when they also said to us, you've got boats, where's Portnet? Where's the marine world? Who's helping you there? So I think those activities, they started to gel and coming together. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just to add very briefly, Madam Chair, what we have said is, in addition to what the Chief has already said, let us go to the Minister, who is the executive authority, and inform him of clearly the areas that he needs to discuss with his colleagues in Cabinet with regards to those areas that belong to the various other departments and ministries. That is one thing. As the Chief Executive said, we ourselves are in that process of doing so with various departments. But thirdly and most importantly, we would expect this committee to assist in that regard. Once there's a comprehension and understanding that the vast majority of South Africans have got a great regard, hold Robben Island in great regard, this committee would help in being able to interface with similar committees dealing with specific, for instance, the Department of Education. This committee could deal with the portfolio committee, parliamentary portfolio committee with that, to say to draw its attention to some of these elements and various other similar departments. That is our expectation. That's our request. Thank you.
31,000, Madam Chair, we nearly forgot to answer. It deal with cash flow problems, Robben Island. There was one staff member, actually, who came to our NIST, interviewed, and he started to work with us. In a period of 3 months before his probation was over, he stole about 31,000 from one of the shops. I think Mama van der Vaart, you're right. That's a police case to us. Clearly, that case was reported to the police, and the case went on, and the lady was locked up. We just don't have an art to how to deal, like probably Scorpions did, session seizure. So we can even seizure the buttons if we. But that case was sealed. We can give a report on it. Thank you, Madam Chair. What normally happens, you've got some benefits that you normally acquire from the institution. So those were clamped down, and the case was handed over to the police. But she's in prison, I think. Thank you.
My other little question is about the school and the learners. How far does the school go? And if the learners have passed that stage of the school, what happens to them? And the learners from other countries and living there. How is that managed again? Who pays for them and their boarding and lodging and things like that? Because they seem to be very happy to be there.
Madam Chair, we have a kindergarten for a crèche. Normally our people when going to work, they then leave the kids. We got mistresses, the teachers who look after the the kids. It's a transsibling. But what is very unique and problematic also, as Chair was indicating, is that, you know, parents have to pay some fees for those kids to be there. And those teachers also have to be paid. The challenging factor there is you'll have to buy food for those kids. And if you don't, if parents, for example, are also having their own frustrations and not paying for their kids, it becomes a problem in our unfunded mandate. Because we'll have to make sure those kids, somewhere, one way or another, they get food. And of course, there have been some donations of some toys, mattresses that comes from the good world. But it's not enough because population, we have noticed, it starts to grow every year. So that's one area. And then the second area is that we've got a school. Council picked up that we pay one teacher from our budget, but government also pays one teacher. So the question was, why do you have to not commit government into this whole area? They go from grade 7, standard 5. I don't know, Madam Chair, during our time we used to say standard 5. Now they say grade 7. Grade 7. But as soon as they have passed all those classes, they go over to the mainland. Now, I'm sure you are catch up now with the situation of a particular growth. My child, I'm staying in Robben Island, has to go to the mainland. So the first boat in the morning, as it's coming over, it's to pick up the tourists in the morning, then it collects. It brings back those kids that are going back to school. And later, when our last boat goes over, then they will then follow suit. Now, the area of education is the RITP, Robben Island Training Program. This was discovered some years ago. It has three strategic objectives: to teach the younger people on the basis of the leadership skills. It was then twinned up with three universities, that is the Western Cape, UCT, and UWC, because and then it is also funded along the same line. It means people on basis of heritage, they then come from different components of the world. These three universities, they take charge to make sure the budgets are right, the sponsorship is right. But as Chair was saying, that is one area which you'd be proud of. The third layer there is the outreach program. Outreach program, it means we have people who get to the schools, who tell our students in the schools around the programs we are running in Robben Island and what is Robben Island. I think the basic issue is, to be very fair and honest to ourselves, nobody in this country would love to see this country going back to what it was before. So the proactive arrangement was that let's reach the children. So then we warn of this danger. Let them be a society that knows peace. There must be a society that discards war. Because if we want to participate in that space. Chairperson was also happy when he said the outreach program is one of the programs that talks into the hand of the young mind to make sure that. But in the final analysis, those schools do come over. Then we have a special tour for them. And of course, the concession as they come over. We give them a concession and we take them through the tour and through the space. And then you also have those students that you are talking about. It's quite a program which it also involves the heritage nature of, and when they leave the institution, they go back to their provinces, and they become really people who help in those provinces because that is what they would have learned at this space. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the
from embassy, you know, our relationship with the management and council of our embassy must be very dynamic. Where there are problems with council or management, they must raise it and hold it accountable, you know. And I think you must also be quite frank, where, you know, you not for us to wait or raise questions or read about it. I know it is our fault last time when we had to read about it in the district about the research, because we didn't have any time to really probe some of the issues that we were coming to raise with us. Maybe one other thing, Chairperson, that I would like to say is that the committee actually are being critical of an item. Especially in light of the animal. I would also like to keep a new place. So I think we should request that we be invited.
To invite them now.
First, we make for the committee. And I think some of the issues we can then, you know, discuss on the but I just want to, on behalf of the family, wish the new council well and hope that they will do well. Yeah.
Madam Chair, if I can just closing comments. First and foremost, let us probably thank the committee for having given us the opportunity to make a presentation and to hear where we're trying to get to, and of course to get advised and get encouraged by your interest in the affairs of Northern Ireland. We are very grateful to the committee for that. Let us further maybe take this opportunity to in the presence of management, to invite all members of this committee to visit Northern Ireland. We would request the management of Northern Ireland and the officials of the committee to make appropriate logistical arrangements and to sort out the time so that we can coordinate the process. We think it would be a very, very useful thing for members of this committee and a very exemplary thing to you as public representatives to say to South Africans, we also visit that space and we are interested in its proper conservation and preservation. So we are very grateful to that. We would like you to please come.
We've always been interested. We have been there before you come. So it will be a second visit.
Please. We think that your coming there will help improvement, continuous improvement. We are very keen to move forward. If we had to go backwards into history of Northern Ireland of South Africa, we'd never finish. We need to move forward and see what can we do positively, what can we do that improves and takes everything forward. We must remember that we even have a history there of the detainment of detention of John Father Foster, of offenders of Robbie Lebrun, the integral part of this history that we must begin to celebrate it in a different way. It's not only the people that were on there as political prisoners from the recent era, the 60s, plus also those ones. They are an integral part of this history. We want to all celebrate that. So please feel invited, and definitely we will make everything possible to try and take account of your advice. And we are really very keen, Madam Chair, to have that open door to come to yourself as a representative of the public to say, this is what we are doing. And on a quarterly basis, we need to be prepared to achieve that. And do not feel shy to question us. We are ready to provide answers. Where we don't know or we have erred, we should apologize. We need guidance. We'll get ask your guidance. Thank you.
Thank you. King Kizenda would say, Mana Ula Aida Kadao Zili. So, I'm also echoing what Honorable Mamu has said that the Kaka Rogan and the community is our CA too. We will make sure that it must survive. Like I said, that we don't run away from our culture. Unfortunately, we have another president. So, we you are invited for lunch at 1 o'clock, unless it's very, very nearby here. You are invited for lunch at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
You are leave now for a while. We'll get a lunch.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Chief. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Hands up, you are welcome. We started with Robin Allen and you. We just thought if we can call the big shots, the ones who are holding our committee, not holding in the sense of not holding, but who is leading our committee to whatever we want to do.
Okay.
That is the main reason why we started with you.
Okay.
And Robin Allen.
Okay.
You are our backbone. Without you, we can't move. So that I will be crying on the podium, crying, crocodile tears, no response. Our country is really comprised of these many languages. I should be by now addressing you by Tshivenda, and this is Zulu,
yes.
Because it's Tonga, it's But unfortunately, because of the men right at the corner, we are compromising ourselves. Because the car is not new. It's really well of defender, even stronger.
Mm-hmm.
He just treated me as a corner. Just what he claimed. I don't think this is how people should be greeted. Repeat yourself.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Mama.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So at
Introducing yourself and your entourage. Thank you, Honorable Chair. May I greet all the honorable members of the Arts and Culture Portfolio Committee. Nami ndiyabulela ukusho ukuthi ngabe kukuhle sikhuluma ngezilimi zethu. Ngiyabonga ukuthi ke namhlanje uyasigcizelela leso stembu sokuthi sekufanele ukuthi sonke sikhulume ngelimi zethu, kodwa ke singakakwenzi okufanele kwenzeke njengokuthi sinikeze abahumushi okuyibona bona soqhubeka ngalolu limi lwasemzini. Ngithanda ke ukuthula phambi kwaleli komiti elihloniphekile engihambisana nabo. I am presenting to you the management team from Pan South African Language Board. On my extreme left is Mr. Singh, who is our Chief Financial Officer. Next to me is Mr. Chris Swepu, who is the Deputy Chief Executive Officer. And on my right is Mr. Vugile Mbilini. He is the Manager for Finances. And I am Dombene Tenkosi, the Chief Executive Officer of Pan South African Language Board. We thank you for giving us this opportunity to present to you our budget. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. I wanted you to please say, I should have told you that let them talk their own language, but you think also.
Okay.
So unfortunately, you did it on their behalf. I don't know that they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, not to waste time, we are happy that at least we know.
At our age, you no longer tell lies because our grandchildren will learn a bad habit.
So, from my side, I believe you know, we all know them, Tivase.
Yes.
Liva, Limpopo, Constance, and Gandhi Toyazo. That is a great Limpopo.
Yes.
Baba Bengu. Kuvelati.
Kamangababa ngumfundisela sibonga uBhengu ngilungana leli komiti
siyabonga Ngcolosi
switch off your mic Bhengu
tumela number 5
tumela Yale buha, date reto.
Sambonan,
siyabonga magega. Siyabulela mme.
Thank you very much. You see what actually about the health matter. So, we may research our way. How to think to do this through the officer. Unfortunately, I mean, this is to me. So, it understood me, my problem. Can you please introduce yourself?
Frau Bona, my name is Kazi. My name is Nikki van Veld. Ik is die parlementaire naam voor zo. Hi, welkom.
Thank you.
I'm Abdullah
Smith,
CMG.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Another case trying to learn me another language desperately. But here I am, they reckon about from the DA, thanks.
Thank you, madam.
Sinaba bavela ku department nangu ugqoke I black shirt. Can you please introduce yourself?
Welile Gasweni.
Thank you very much, Welile.
Over to you, CA.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Arts and Culture Portfolio Committee. Our presentation is going to be conducted led by me, but I'm going to allow the colleagues to come in at different stages of the presentation. First of all, I would like to applaud the move by the Portfolio Committee to invite us today to deliver to you our strategic plan for the medium term 2008 to 2011, and would like to present to you the current budget needs of the organization. And in our presentation, you are going to see that we are crying out to your assistance to actually begin to address the issue of the budget. And therefore, in this presentation, we would like to see the outcome of this presentation being that the issue of the budget is being addressed seriously. I would like to indicate our legislative mandate as PANSAT derived its legislative mandate from the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, the PAN-South African and the PAN-South African Act, Act number 55 of 1995, as amended in 1999. And PANSAT regulations. The powers and functions of the board are as presented to you, and I'm not going to dwell on them because I think we need to get into the actual issues of today. And these are provided to you in the form of the what called the presentation. But let me just. Thank you. That is why I'm rushing through this. Allow me, Chairperson, just to give you the purpose of PANSA, which is multilingualism by developing and promoting equal use and status of all official languages, national unity and respect for the Bill of Rights as it pertains to respect and cultural tolerance of all languages and restoration of dignity of formerly marginalized languages. We also want to see to the implementation of language policies at all levels of government, language development plans, projects, and initiatives, appropriate research in support of language development, all measures meant to protect and support constitutional democracy with respect to language. We also would like to promote public dialogue to change mindsets and attitudes to language, promoting the value of indigenous languages, monitoring the application of language legislation, advising government on linguistic matters. Now, in terms of our service delivery, if you look at the initiatives that we have undertaken as a board, you can see that we are really trying to meet with our mandate. You have the, in terms of the strategy that speaks to the awareness, we have held various ceremonies such as the multilingualism, awards, which by their very nature are aimed at uniting the nation and actually promoting multilingualism. And this is also a way of bringing in the stakeholders so that they can see the impact of multilingualism in the ground. We also have cooperated with a number of institutions such as the Microsoft. We have signed MOUs with STEP South Africa. We are at this point in time busy with the National House of Traditional Leaders. We have signed MOUs with the Eastern Cape Department of Education. We have signed MOUs with Home Language Project. We have signed MOUs with a number of organizations because these are the stakeholders that will actually make multilingualism realized by different communities. However, we've got various challenges that come across, such as, for instance, some municipalities are still not buying into the issue of the use of mother tongues or languages that are preferred by communities, as it is stated in the Constitution. We have seen organizational growth. For instance, we have employed 13 senior language practitioners and deployed them in provincial offices to enable delivery on the ground and for the coordination of NLUs, PLC, and NLPs. This is a big move by PANSA because we are now having foot on the ground so that we can actually see that the mandate of PANSA is taken care of. And I would like now to bring in the picture the Deputy CEO, who is going to present to you our 2008 and 2009 operational plan. Over to you, Deputy CEO.
Thank you very much, CEO. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will just briefly present to the committee here a summary of the kind of initiatives that we are planning to undertake, and some of them we have already started undertaking in this financial year. We're indicating that we have embarked on a three-year strategic and business planning process, and the document we have circulated to the House is a reflection of such planning. And added to that, we have developed an entire planning cycle that is aligned to government processes such that we are able to deliver in terms of our mandate, but also to align ourselves with the processes of government. We have certainly taken a deep introspection of the organization and highlighted both areas of concern and opportunity. We're talking here about issues such as strengthening itemized budgeting within the organization and constant reviews of implementation within our services. So this is the kind of introspection we're talking about. We have developed a clear program of action over a three-year period, and this annual operational plan is a reflection of that process. I've already spoken to the planning cycle. What we are also saying through our legal unit this year, we're preparing for the attention of the board and subsequently the chief state law advisor, who we have already had preliminary engagements on, and ultimately parliament. We're preparing a submission on amendments that we think are necessary to the Pensions Act to include compliance and enforcement. And this is a point we'll speak to in detail in the next slide. We also want to indicate to the board that limited funding has negatively affected Pensions delivery. One of the things we want to do, and perhaps just want to present to you the strategic objectives that underpin our annual operational planning process, and these are contained in the document in front of you. One of them is raise the public profile, visibility, and influence of Pensions and the organization's impact on its constitutional mandate backed by cooperative governance and partnerships. I'll just read them through because in terms of the flesh, the following slides will speak to the strategic goals. We want to introduce enforcement and monitoring of language policy implementation in addition to the ongoing role of language policy development and monitoring. To focus on language education with emphasis on enabling mainstream economic access to previously disadvantaged language groups. To actively promote, develop, and empower the official languages with more emphasis on the previously marginalized languages, the Khoi and the San languages, and the South African Sign Language, to raise their status to that of lasting visible symbols provincially and nationally through a language monument to showcase South Africa's language development history amongst local and international tourists. One of the capital projects the CEO will speak about speaks to this particular goal. To influence, promote, and enforce multilingualism in all organs of society. To perform a critical appreciation of its effectiveness by developing an operational model that enhances this. Now, these are some of the key undertakings we would be performing this year in support of these strategic goals. We want to review the organogram of Pensa to enable better service delivery. We have already started that process in the strategic document. And at this point, we have 58 employees at Pensa, and the reviewal process has indicated that we would at least need 552 employees to undertake the kind of mandate that has been given to us. Part of what we want to do as well is to develop a fully integrated HR finance and supply chain management system. Now, this area includes reviewing and updating our policies in the areas, a constant review of the policies. It is a compliance issue that has been identified by our internal stakeholders that we would need to have electronic integrated systems in those areas, such we are compliant when the Auditor General visits. We are also implementing a performance management system and a staff retention strategy. And this is informed by many observations, including that of SCOPA, that the low staff morale, which was indicated in our previous visits here, has been as a result of the level at which the posts are at. And as such, we have undergone a job grading process through a service provider who assisted in that process, and we will be presenting that to the board as well. Part of our public awareness raising processes is that, as the CEO has already indicated, we have held successful multilingualism awards, mother tongue celebrations, which have really, really placed Pensalp on the map. We have been invited by various radio stations, Umhlobo Wenene, Kaya FM, Ukhozi, Metro FM. Various newspapers have also contain statements and interviews with Pensalp. We also engaging the kind of stakeholders that the CEO has indicated to improve our stakeholder relations. We are also in the process of developing an IT master systems plan. This is also a compliance issue, Chairperson. where an organization needs appropriate backup of its system for auditing purposes. And through our PLCs, we are positioning ourselves at the forefront of language policy development and implementation. For us, this is very critical because Cabinet has pronounced on the need for municipalities and other government departments to have language policies and units. Our PLCs are engaging with municipalities, and this is the drive we want to strengthen this year to ensure that we deliver on Cabinet's instruction. We are coordinating internal structures to achieve best synergies to our provincial offices. 10 have established provincial offices in all provinces in the country, and these offices are already delivering a number of partnerships. The partnerships we are speaking to have been in the main been facilitated through our provincial offices. We have created a fundraising committee as well. We have established, even though it reflects us to create in the plan, we are already in the second month of our implementation. And to that extent, we have created this committee to ensure that some of the capital projects we have, which are not only going to be funded by government, but also through public-private partnerships, are realized. So this committee is facilitating that process. I've already spoken to stakeholder relationships and management. Part of the review of the PENSAL Act is to ensure that the Act provides PENSAL with the authority to enforce compliance. And so we're putting that in our review, which we will present ultimately to Parliament with the process that we have indicated. The other aspect of the review of the Act is to ensure that there is consistency with the Public Act. We have identified certain gaps in the process. We are embarking on vigorous awareness campaigns across all government departments. We've already spoken to this, that we have MOUs with State South Africa, DPLG, Justice, and a number of municipalities. We want, as a very serious matter, to review the remuneration of our structures that are delivering on the ground, the PLCs and the NLBs and the NLUs, in order to attract quality contributors. This is in relation with the job grading process that we have already undertaken. We want to promote the value of mother tongue education through training and awarding of bursaries. We have observed with sadness, Chairperson and members, that some universities are already closing the departments for African studies, as they call them. And what is always highlighted is the shortage of numbers of students, the enrollment, and so on. So we also see it as our responsibility to ensure that we encourage learners to go and enroll in these departments. And we thus creating a scheme, a bursary scheme to encourage them. From January to April this year, we have received 18 linguistic human rights complaints. And to that extent, it is a major aspect of what we want to reinvigorate and ensure that our people are aware of their linguistic rights. We also want to celebrate important calendar events, as we have been doing in promoting marginalized languages. We also intend to launch the revised spelling and orthography rules. So you may have add on this.
Yeah, in May, sometime in May, we will be launching a revised orthography and spelling booklets in all the official languages. And this is going to help us a lot in terms of uploading the computer, so that when we write in the computers, we do not have the spell check that we are writing a wrong message. As we find now, when you get into the Microsoft, you'll find that Microsoft says that whatever we're writing is wrong. It's underlined as red. But once we have got these spelling and orthography rules in the computers, our languages will actually be reflected as correctly written. This is one step in the right direction, which will make all our languages to be computer aligned. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will also standardize term lists and glossaries. In this regard, we have a standardization conference in September. We intend to produce this list and groceries in all domains, but for this year we'll focus on IT, legal, education, and the media. We want to develop writers in all official languages. This includes the holding of workshops for authors in all genres. The CEO would at a later stage speak to one of the capital projects that also speaks to seeks to enhance this particular activity and also the creative writing workshops. We want to improve the standard of translators and interpreters. We have already started revamping the PenSalp unit that deals with translation and interpreting. This is one of the biggest demands we meet when we interact with government departments, the need for translation and interpreting. And we are thus revamping that unit and also appointing a very competent person in status language planning to assist with that process. We want to intensify NLB projects aimed at promoting marginalized languages. We're holding workshops with parents of deaf children and assisting with South African Sign Language, with the training of South African Sign Language practice interpreters. We also want to, this year, launch the South African Language Teaching and Learning Materials. This is a very big contribution, a project we are undertaking in partnership with the University of the Free State. We're going to be training language instructors in the Khoi and the Sen languages. May I also say, CEO, that we have been doing this service through community members. And in our last multilingualism awards, it may have been observed that we awarded these community members, Anne Katrina and Mr. Dossop, awards for their contribution in this regard. And the next one is just a brief synopsis. The entirety of the proposed corporate structure is included in the document in front of members. We just highlighted the top management of the structure. Thank you very much, CEO.
I now hand over to the Chief Financial Officer just to introduce to the House the budget as it stands. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO, Chairperson, Honourable Members. PenSalp had a strategic planning session last year, and this was after reviewing the organogram to enable better service delivery, this is the proposed PenSalp corporate structure. We've got the office of the Chief Executive Officer beefed up with the manager, who on the CEO's office will basically look at the admin support, services, HR, legal, and audit communications, head of strategy implementation, and a parliamentary officer. Two deputy CEOs, one for language development directors and one for language implementation directors. The CFO for corporate services, supply chain management, and finance. The costing of the strategic plan, basically when the different categories, and focus areas as listed on the left, we've broken it down into the years of 2008 to 9, 9 to 10, and 10 to 11. The grand capex budget, which we were looking for, just for the integrated capital budget requirements for 2008 to 9 is 245.6 million, and 2009 to 2010 is 270.1 million, and for 2010 to 2011, 297.2 million. When we looked at the costing of the strategic plan in terms of the headcount for this budget, we've got the one before. One after, we've got the headcount which details the positions and the number of persons per post. For 2008 year, including the core business projects and the cost for the employees, we're looking at 350.9 million for the 2008-2009 year. For the 2009 to 2010 year, 385.9 million. And for 2010 and 11, we're looking at 424.5 million. As stated earlier, we currently have 58 employees. To effectively deliver on our mandate, we require 552 staff members. So we're still short of many staff members to deliver effectively. Thank you.
Mr. Mbilini is going to actually emphasize some of the points that the CFO has raised.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of that proposed budget that was indicated by the CFO, that one will be in line of compliance. The auditors indicated to us that, for instance, if you look at it in terms of trade regulation, separation of duties, the people that we have, the manpower that we have in Pentel, it doesn't, the finance that we have at Pentel doesn't go in line with our requirements in terms of PFMA and the federal regulation. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to present the one of the previous past expenditure patterns. One, the breakdown of Pentel budget in the past few years demonstrates upwards on trend on salaries. The Pentel, increased from 21.55% from 2002 to 24.66% in 2005 in terms of salaries. 2007. Thank you. As far as the direct spending on the core business is concerned, an average of 47% over the past 5 years was dedicated in this expense. The budget, the biggest chunk, which is 36.53%, went to the National Lexicography Unit, which is a dictionary unit, which are charged with the development and the publication of dictionaries in all the official languages. The balance has been utilized by the national language bodies and the provincial language committees to revise a spelling and orthography and the standardization as well as the terminology. This is a summary of the past 9 years pattern expenditure. We started from 2009, this expenditure starting from 2009 up to date. If you look at the grant that we have been receiving, 1999 to 2000, the financial year. The grant that we received in 1999 to 2000 was 12,205,000. And then our expenditure, that it was 8,343,000. We had a surplus of that of 3.8 million. The following year, which is 2000 and 2001, the budget allocation that we received from Treasury was 13 million, and then we spent 10 million. There was an underspending of 2.4 million. But in 2002 financial year, Pentel received a grant of 16,081,000. The expenditure there went up, 16,230,000. We had overspending of 149,000. 2002-2003, Pentel received a grant of 18,645,000. Also, it went overspend. 18,873,000. It has overspending of 228,000. The 2003-2004, we received 21,634,000. But our expenditure went to 22,128,000, which is overspenditure of 492,000. In 2005, we received 24 million. We overspent by 45 million. In 2005-06, we received 26 million, we overspent by 1.6 million. 2006-07, we received 39 million and 95, we underspent by 7 million. 2008-2009, we received 45 million, we spent 47 million, we have overspent of 3 million. And it seems that in 2008-2009, this year, we are receiving 47,451,000. Following page, committed funds for 2007-2008. In 2007-2008, Pentel received 43,600,000. Out of that, Pentel managed to put some interest in the bank, which it went to the budget of 51 million. So we had a rollover fund of 4,388,000, including the interest that we have in the bank. But we already had committed funds costing 6,969,000. So in 2007-2008, Pentel went to overspending again. The following one, the budget allocation for 2008-2009. I'll stick only based on the annual operations plan of 2008-2009. The first column there, which is the budget. Budget, revised budget, expenditure, rollover, and the percentage. This is the past expenditure, which is already indicated there, which is 2008-2009. But I will stick on what the Deputy CEO was indicating about annual operational plans for 2008-2009 this year. If you look at the Pentel, if in terms of Pentel, we've got Pentel Act, it indicates that provincial language committees, national language committees, national language bodies, and NLUs, they are structures of Pentel, and they are the core business of Pentel. That's why Pentel exists in terms of that. So there are clusters within these provincial committees, NLPs, and NLUs. For instance, if you look at the PLCs, you will find the legal is there. You will find status language planning for policies are there. And you find education are there. But according to the request that they have, out of the 47 million that we received this year, PENSALP, we received 47 million, 451. But if you look at that cluster, the PLC alone, it says in order to deliver with the current structure that we have, they want 40 million alone, that PLC, in order to deliver on the ground. And PENSALP managed to give them only 3.8 million, according to the current budget. The NLBs also requesting 21 million. But the PENSALP, according to the current budget, managed to give them only 1.8 million. The National Language Bodies, which is the National Lexicography Units, which are the dictionaries, they are requesting 23,400,000. But according to the current budget, PENSALP managed to give them only 11 million. The board of PENSALP, which is in the PENSALP Act, is indicating that the board must have at least 4 board meetings per annum. And each board meeting, one meeting is costing 160,000 to have that meeting. So according to that structure, they requested 800,000. But according to the current budget, we gave them only 100,000. So it will be difficult even for the board to leave. If you go to the last total, which is a language work, because we are the language board, we have to look at the language issues. The language issues, they requested 101 million. But according to the current budget, we PENSALP managed to give them only 21,416,000. The corporate, which is administration, it has to follow with a requirement. They requested 50,115,000, but according to the current budget, PENSALP managed to allocate only 26,000 so that we can live within the budget. The total amount requested according to the annual operation plan for 2008-2009, the PENSALP as a whole, they said in order to deliver on the ground, they request 151,968,000. But PENSALP has got only 47,451,000. The second page, that graph. The graph is indicating the past performance, how PENSALP has been spending its finances there. If you look at the 29, if you look at the whole pie there, the big chunk, which is going to the NLUs, 29%. The NLUs are, in terms of Section C of the PENSALP Act, they say PENSALP shall establish the National Lexicography Unit and will fund those units. So the 29% is going to NLUs. The 23%, it goes to a salary of PENSALP. The 13%, it goes to PLCs, which are the structures of PENSALP. The 6%, it goes to NLBs, which are structures of PENSALP. The 9%, it goes to corporation. The corporation with other bodies is the office of the CEO, annual report, and to call all these structures to account at the head office. 10%, which is the communication with the mouthpiece of the organization, and 1% was on the board, because we had only a few months that we had a board meeting, and 2% went to administration, that's the supply chain with compliance. The following page, the challenges that we had in 2008-2009, the current allocation of 47,451,000 does not allow for delivery projects contained in the annual operational plan. As I indicated in the past, that they requested 151,968,000, but PENSALP has got only 47. Expenditure trend shows that PENSALP is being underfunded. If you can check the past 7 years, out of that nine, the past 7 years, the PENSALP definitely has been overspending and is a crime to overspend. The PENSALP Act Section A and B compares the board to establish and support national lexicographic units, which are dictionary units, provincial language committees, and the national language bodies. The board is unable to support these structures as required due to lack of funding. This is in non-compliance. Due to lack of funding, the board is unable to address serious non-compliance issues as observed in the previous audit, like paying off appropriate salaries. The PENSALP is always facing that staff turnover. Every year you have to employ. Every year we have to employ. People are leaving because our salaries are not in line. The board is unable to deliver on its core mandate as it's grossly underfunded. The continued underfunding of PENSALP sets it up for guaranteed overspending, as does criminalize the board. Challenges with 2007-8 and 2008-9 say no formal communication of PENSALP allocation has been received yet. The first tranche of the grant allocated deposited to PenSalve account without any communication only on the second week of April 2008. This had adverse effect on our planning and continued operations. No formal approval of PenSalve plans due to the absence of the board. CEO notified on the 12th of February 2008 that the board was appointed in October 2007. List of board names received on the 19th of March 2008. The board has not been inaugurated yet. Thank you, Chairperson, in that note.
Now I finalize this presentation by presenting to the Honorable House the capital projects that PenSalve intends to undertake. We have been approached by various communities in terms of the printing of newspapers, government newsletters, even books on indigenous languages. They call themselves Mzansi Media Mecca. This is one initiative where our indigenous languages are going to be mass produced, because you know that the publishers in this country shun African languages. We are told that there are no books in the libraries because African languages are not represented in the bookshop. Now, we have a letter here which we are going to distribute to the Honorable House of a person complaining bitterly that the publishers do not print African languages. If we do not take an initiative such as this one, our languages are going to die a natural death. So this is one capital project that we are going to undertake as PenSalve. And what is good about this project is that it's the people themselves who approach PenSalve. And we said to them, you must form yourself into a cooperative. So they formed this Mzansi Media Mecca. It is a registered organization. They've identified 10 million to be able to purchase a plant from India to be placed in some part in Limpopo, so that we are going to produce African materials. This is also in support of the cabinet decision to actually raise the literacy level amongst our people. If the cabinet has taken the decision to raise the literacy level, what materials are they going to read if they are not produced? So we are therefore supporting the cabinet decision to have reading materials for our people. The next capital project is the South African Language Village project. In South Africa, it is very strange that when you enter South Africa, you enter South Africa as if you are entering a European country. There is nothing that is indicating that South Africa is indeed an African country. We are going to change the landscape of South Africa by actually providing a structure which we call a South African language village, which we are going to demonstrate as we go on. Just to do this project, we need the seed funding of 50 million in this current year, so that this we can do the exploration, the research, and purchasing of land for this, so that this will be in line with the current vision of PenSalve, that we need to have a translation and interpreting house, status language, linguistic, language in education, literature and filming, terminology, language standardization, lexicography. And we also need to have at the center there our own space. Just recently, we had a burglary in the building where we are because we are renting. And this is causing a lot of difficulty in terms of our operation. But fortunately enough, because we are most organized, we were protected by the fact that most of our information is stored electronically and it was safe. But that is not a comfortable thing to do. This language village, we'll have a hotel where we would have people coming from overseas to teach in the Mashilingwan Institute that is going to be part of this language village. We'll have a theater where our children are going to be taught to develop their own films. We always have films from outside, but we need to come to a stage where we have a structure where our children can actually form films and also be film goers. We have a theater there, we have a recreational area, and a learning center, which is a multilingual institute, where we are going to do training of various kinds in the different domains. So the village, the South African language village, is actually in line with the centers that have already been developed in this country, the Constitutional Hill, the Carry of Humankind, Hector Peterson Memorial, Apartheid Museum. In other words, this will be finishing this set, because there's nothing that has been created for languages. In promoting multilingualism, we want to also embark on this indigenizing project, which is branding the walls of our communities and having billboards which are going to indicate that you are now in South Africa. This project is in line with the 2010 initiative, that we need to actually show to the visitors that they have come into South Africa. So we hope that this project is one of the many projects that is going to turn South Africa into an African country, not as it stands now. We hope that this project will actually require 21 million. These are therefore the capital projects, Chair and the Honorable House, that PANSAC wish to undertake. And it is clear that we cannot do this with the 47 million that has been given. The proposed medium-term budget of 300 million excludes these capital projects. So we need a lot of money. But we have already indicated that we would form a standard fundraising committee that will assist us. But we definitely need to have a commitment from Parliament to assist us with the improvement of this budget. Otherwise, we will always be coming here complaining that we are underfunded. But I trust that today we are going to get a clear direction forward. Thank you, Chair and the Honourable Members.
Thank you very much.
I'm okay. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
So I think language is the master key.
Yeah. I think language is the master key and it's our pride. We were deprived from long that I always tell people that we even wrote exams, which one sometimes write that he looks so accurate and you even don't say he looks so accurate and he looks so Marita to be wrong. And we pass those exams. So, like I'm saying, that language is our pride. One has a problem. Last week I had something in radio, I think it was in teacher radio, when they were interviewing people, that which official language can we as South African use? I had a headache immediately. Are they still talking of official language which South African can really use? When we have this language both of ours, really, where are they getting this information? I was worried. The mindset is still backward. I really believe that our languages are equal and have to be treated equally. So, from you, I'm just raising a question. We have a problem of people with disabilities, more especially the deaf people, whom you find that they don't have any instrument or whatever method to can communicate with their people at home. We only know that, we don't know when we show our stomach, it means that I'm hungry. When we do like this, we mean water. Or I don't hear, I mean that's what our people struggle. Do you have any plan or program for where you can help the family to can learn this sign language? And because we find that it's one person at home, people can know, the family cannot communicate with that person. Thank you for the presentation, and I believe it was an eye opener to our people. We were worried about this Pensa bond. We are happy now that you are bringing us to listen to it. Members will be, I'm giving them chance now to raise some questions for clarity. Thank you.
Honorable Bengu, followed by people,
thank you, Madam Chair. Well, certainly I want to thank the good presentation made by the CEO and his crew. Very, very few questions here. You know, there is something very interesting about this thing of the language. And I wonder whether Pensab does have an answer to it, because it's something which tends to be historical, and it eventually became attitudinal. You see, as a Black African, and this happens to a number of us, Black Africans, when you meet a white person, a colored person, an Indian person, without being, it happens instinctively, you just speak in English. Just in English. And the other expects you to speak in English. Whether you know English or not, that's immaterial. And my grandfather used to struggle in English because, I mean, he never went to school. And he would, how, good morning, Basi, coming home. He would speak very broken English. Now, I used to say to myself, why does he have to speak in a language that he doesn't know, and the other doesn't actually care to speak the language that my grandfather knows? You see, it has become so attitudinal that you are expected to speak, the other language of the other. Whether the other can speak a language or not, it's immaterial. And the other doesn't actually want to speak your language. So it's a matter which actually, I don't know whether Pensab would be able to address that. But to me, it's something which is very, very painful in that, it tends to perpetuate the colonization of the language. And then again, you have Model C school, which actually, we have this trend now that, it has become a kind of a melting point. And in Model C school, the indigenous language or languages are actually subdued by the English language. And that has actually been proven. And I don't know. I wonder what the Pensab are actually doing about that, because I remember in Durban that there was a lot of talk about this, that you see, Black African children or school-going children are beginning to actually not even to complete a sentence in their own indigenous language. And to me and many others, that actually kills their own indigenous language. So it's another area, that one. I'm worried, Chairperson, about the issue of the board. And I think it's a matter that actually needs to be addressed, because, it doesn't occur well. This village, Colossus, and Mzansi Media America, I don't know. I think one will have to be educated in terms of whether does it fall under the constitutional mandate of the centers, because I see these at the end of the day as business entities generating some business, generating some profit, and that's otherwise argued. But that's how I see them, and if that is the
you know, intended steps. I don't know whether that is actually within the mandate of the tenants of the board. I mean, I don't know. But Chair, it would be good that the intended mandate actually doesn't tend to be a business generating kind of a profit, which actually would be against the whole of philosophy of the government by actually helping that kind of thing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Vanabas.
Okay, thank you. I am normally quite tough on Central, but I'll start being nice, and that is to say to the CEO, we should congratulate you on the International Language Day that we attended.
Thank you, Honorable.
And especially the awards that was handed out to the students. And fatigue is writing their own things in their own language is becoming an artist as well. And also the fact that you went public in saying that every school should learn the children in third language.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got a lot of compliments.
Thank you, Honorable.
And of course, language is close to my heart too. I'm sure everybody is aware. But on your dreams, I'm going to call it dreams because there's nothing, you know, if you can dream it, you can achieve it. That's the old saying. But I must caution you as well against the fact that if one doesn't know better and you read this, I would say that the CEO and maybe the two deputies is building a empire for themselves. If you read this in business terms, it is really not good. I have never seen any entity that has deputy CEOs. We all have a CEO, you have a CFO, and you have directors. And if you just change a bit of this on your budget to make other posts, you can get it away with a few rand, for example, just on those two. I really think this is not good. If you look at the 47 million that you actually get as a grant from the department, the CEO's office needs 160 million for the next year. That is more than twice the grant that you get from the department. So I am saying, and the village, before I want to say something about the budget further, is the language village, I mean, it's very nice if you have the money and we can do it, great. But there's so much duplication in here because I do not see that all these things that you have here should be in a specific village. They must be out there at the universities, wherever. Many of these things, I mean, language and education should not be here. It should be at the educational level, at all the schools, all the higher education places, ABIT, wherever. So, you know, to convince me as a member of this committee that this is what you need now, I must say I'm not convinced. What I want to warn you about is the fact that the budget concerns me a lot. Because number one, Pantel, and I know you haven't been the CEO all the time, has had a very bad record in Parliament since I came here, and at SOFA. If you can't even run your finances in a proper way, in accordance with what you get, and I know it's little because every entity wants more, how can you expect government to take you seriously on these figures that you're putting on the budget now? I mean, I'm not hammering you as a person. I'm just saying your dream is way out of line. And that's not to underestimate the job and the task that is stayed upon you by the constitution of the country. It is, you can't be taken seriously if you want more. I think your staff component exceeds about 200, if I'm not mistaken. The number of staff in the department, the whole department. Your dream for 552 people. I don't even think the department has so many staff. So that to me is, you know, if you want us to take you seriously, you'll have to scale down a lot. And hopefully get to the dream eventually. But you can't, this is not, I don't think it's acceptable. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mbombo.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And
So many schools, children who were really desperate, children who do, let me say, learners, this art and culture as a subject in school. I've said this many a time, but they say they get no encouragement, they get nothing from art and culture and Department of Arts and Culture. All they know is that if you're not doing mathematics and science, you are nothing, you're just going to play. Nobody is interested in encouraging them in doing arts and culture and all these other things of arts and culture. As such, they are being looked down by other children. What is this art and culture? Because none, even from us, who encourage them to do art and culture. We can't all be mathematicians or scientists. Other people don't have that brain of mathematics, but they excel in art and culture and languages. They want to know why is there no place for them to hide and say, here is the department coming to us in our school or in our school to teach and to promote art and culture in every aspect. They don't know what heritage is. All they know ukuthi uma ucula indlamu, that's art and culture. This singing, dance, Zulu dance, especially Zulu dance. If you can do that Zulu dance, then it's art and culture. They don't know about other things. They don't know about landscape. They don't know about a lot of things, but those are art and culture. That's my main worry. And on Saturday, this Saturday the 17th, I called the Department of Arts and Culture provincially just to come and explain what is art and culture in my constituency. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me also take this opportunity for the beautiful presentation from Alpha Pampa. In the recent past, we as committee did complain about the visibility of the provincial language committees in different provinces, but I want to congratulate you that you now mention that those committees have been established in all provinces. You are doing a beautiful work. I just wanted to find out how are these committees structured. That is my first question. Your 2008-2009 allocation to these committees is about 3.8 million. In the past, when we had meetings with National Arts Council, we had as committee a complaint of skewed distribution of funds to the province. And I just want to know how this allocation for 2008-2009 going to benefit
disposal, how do you allocate this 3.8 to the tail set?
Honorable Renzulu.
Hold awareness, raising individuals in public hearing. But there are no such things when you go down to the people. It is embarrassing when we think about our language, African language. You go to conferences, let's say provincial conferences, only to find that our people, they simply just ignore their language. They speak English in a way that one member said here, one doctor from Ghana said that we are so colonized in a way, in such a way that we speak the language of the foreigner better than the foreign, the oppressor. This is what is happening. As we are mentioning this language village, how is it if you will take the very same thing as we are complaining within ourselves that the departments are closing in all universities just because we have a running short of a student to start in their own language. Why don't you encourage the university to open that department there and put the money there? How many students that are being trained and giving bursaries to go outside after they can encourage our money? Maybe another thing, it might be better if you ask a slot in these radios, African radios, just to speak out about our language. Because any language that is not spoken disappears. This is the fact. You know, in my life, I have been worried about this drama that you used to see in the court when they are trying cases. But the only one much that I heard about a case that Dennis got, I think it's Tembandov, was the one who tried the case in the language which is understood by the people who know the case. Now, that magistrate, they complained. I understand the complaint from other magistrates saying that it is not easy for the record to appeal about that record because it was recorded in the vernacular. This is very, very, very bad what is happening, and it's a lot that Panthers must do and achieve regarding this language. We have been here for 14 years, but go to the chairman and listen when the interpreter interprets when a person speaks. And even most of us members of parliament, no person can force us, no forcing us that you must speak English. No. Everybody, when he stands up, speak English straight away, running away from his people, from his constituents.
Thank you very much. Just to add to what you are saying is that I think if Tenzab cannot be serious with the translation, more especially when it comes to court proceedings. I always tell people that if you don't know a language, more especially referring to my own language, an African lady, more especially a Venezuelan lady, when she is angry, she speaks a different language altogether. If she's raped, she'll be saying that this person is not a rapist. Even his father and his grandparents are not rapists. You can imagine if that thing is really recorded in that fashion, the judgment will be wrong. So that's why I said, knowing a language, I mean, this translation and whatever translation should be, you have to be serious about it, really. Our children are going astray.
Thank you, honorable members of the Arts and Culture Portfolio Committee. I would like to start by reading from the Constitution, which where we get our mandate in terms of addressing the issue which speaks to us deviating from the mandate of PENSAL. In the Constitution, it says we must create conditions for the implementation or the of multilingualism. That is very broad. In creating conditions, you must first of all address the environment which is responsible for the depreciation of value of African languages. In the conferences where we have been, we have talked about this issue. How do we raise the status of African languages? We need to have an environment that is conducive for the people to develop the love for their languages. So the issue of the South African Languages Village, this is where people are going to see that their languages have got currency. They can have careers in their languages. Yes, the universities can assist, but the universities are very restricted in terms of what they do. And we are saying as PENSAL, we just want to create these possibilities so that people can actually begin to love their languages. They can see that they can live using their languages. Not only think that science, mathematics is the only way to go, but if we can create, for instance, people who can actually form their own films. We are now working hand in hand with some organizations that are filmmakers. They are coming to PENSAL. We can assist in doing that. That is one way of raising the status of the indigenous language. It is there in the Constitution. So therefore, we are not deviating from our mandate. But in terms of saying creating the CEO's, what is the word here? Empire. No, say, we are not. We are not creating any empire, but it is the huge mandate that has been given to PENSAL. PENSAL is a national structure which has just started to have provincial structures, but without any support at the provincial level. The honorable member referred to the department having a national structure, but the honorable member did not mention that the arts and culture department has got provincial departments with warm bodies there. So we are not creating an empire. And in each and every provincial department, there is an HOD. So it is an error to say that we are above in terms of staff members. We are above the Department of Arts. It's not true. And I think we need to actually bring the what's called the statistics here. But my colleague is going to address that one later. If I may go then to the issue that was raised by Honorable Bengu. How can PENSAL address this language hegemony, this perpetuation of colonization? The South African Language Village is going to address that, because we are going to have a center where people can come in and our children can be educated, because there will be material that will address each and every language. And I heard that there's a concern that this is only happening in Gauteng. No, this will be decentralized according to each language group. That is where schools can go and learn more about our heritage, which is actually carried through the language. So this is why we want to have this a village. The issue about the closure of universities is very sensitive. The reason the universities are being closed is because of the new funding formula that was passed by, I don't know whether it's the Council of Universities, but there is a new funding strategy, which is actually marginalizing anything that has to do, if it is not to do with science and other things, it is not important, which is your point, ma'am. So we are saying as PANSAB, as a way of creating the awareness of language careers, we want to have what you call a multilingual institute, which will address subjects that deal with the languages. You can have translation and interpreting unit, where we train our own people. We can have technologies, where we can have people who can be trained to use computers or actually come up with the software in our indigenous languages. That is, we can only do it within our, because universities have not done it. And it is true that our children now look down upon our language because there's no currency. We have not created currency. That is why PANSAB is taking this stance to say that we want to provide the environment where our children can be proud to be Africans and use their languages to earn a living, using it in different domains to earn a living. So I will leave it to Mr. Mbilini. He wants to address an aspect that was raised by Honorable Member Devard. Over to you, Mr. Mbilini.
Thank you, Shane. Honorable Van Devard, she indicated that, I mean, we appeared on the SCOPA. Yes, we appeared in SCOPA because of the qualification that we had, but it was not the question of mismanagement, but was a qualification through the legislation of the PANSAB Act. The PANSAB Act is saying PANSAB shall establish National Lexicography Units, which are the NLUs, as a Section 21 company. And those people are housed by the universities, not by PANSAB. So these units, they've got their own auditors. They've got their own board of directors. They have to submit the financial statements at PANSAB to consolidate with PANSAB's financial statements. But PANSAB doesn't have control on these Section 21 companies. That's why we, during our presentation, we indicated that we need to revise PANSAB Act so that we can, PANSAB have a control on these Section 21 companies. So another issue that was here on SCOPA was the issue of the separation of duties. If you look at the PFMA, say separation of duties, particularly in finance, but due to financial constraints, PANSAB doesn't have those staff members that are required by the PFMA so that we can have, maybe they would say you need 20 staff members in finance, but you find that according to the available budget, you've got only 4 staff members. So it came out on that. That's why we went on SCOPA, that qualification of the NLUs, but not of PANSAB. PANSAB is managing its finances properly.
Some of us had some steps in the SCOPA meeting, so we know exactly why you were in front of
SCOPA. Yes. Another thing was the question of another question was a question from Mr. From Honorable Lichatla was how do we structure these how do we finance these structures? We receive the budget from the treasurer. For instance, we receive this 47 million. The first thing that we do, we comply. The first 30% we're taking from the budget for salaries. The staff that we have, that's a threshold in terms of the requirement. And then the 30% we have to take it to national language, which is NLU, dictionary units. So the remaining amount we have to split according to PLCs and NLPs. That's how we allocate this. And the request, we get a request of funding from these structures, various structures, from the Isixhosa NLBs, isiZulu NLBs, and all of them, they will submit their request to PenSalp. They will request, make their wish list, they will make 2 million rand. And then we find that PenSalp, according to that whole budget, doesn't have 2 million rand, it's got only 100,000. Then we give them what we have, 100,000. That's how we structure them. But the request is coming from them, and then we respond from their request. Thank you.
Mr. Sweeper.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the questions that we have received. I just want to add in clarifying some of the questions. I'm Deputy CEO at PenSalp. I've got to say this. The CEO has tasked me with coordinating the annual operational planning process. It means we've got to produce business plans, itemize budgeting. At some point, we have got to make submissions and so on and so on. This, in terms of the budget that is in front of you, I have to do with 35,000. It includes the traveling to these meetings and to many other meetings. I'm just indicating that the capital projects that have been presented in front of you, the three-year strategic planning process document, is not meant and certainly must not conflate the discussion around the budget and its deficiencies. These are the difficulties that we are facing with the current budget and with the current staff establishment, not with the dream that we have presented in the strategic document, but with the current situation, with the current staff complement. And I have used myself as an example to illustrate this point, that forget the 558 people that we think we need to implement that strategic plan, but just on the current budget, the current staff complement, and the current annual operational plans that we have, we are unable to fund most of the items. And most of the questions that have been raised by the committee members are very valid observations. But that has been addressed in the annual operational plan. Let us take, for instance, the issue of translation when it comes to court processes. That is precisely why we have an MOU with the Department of Justice and an interaction with the Department of Justice. Last week, together with the CEO, we were with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, where we have interacted, and our interaction has resulted in that particular office having a language unit that seeks to assist in the translation of parliamentary documents. So we have got that interaction. But the difficulty, and these are in the annual operational plans as well, but the difficulty, as well as the awareness raising that has been raised here in terms of the observation by a member here that we have not been able to be visible enough, the difficulty is you have this plan, but you are unable to do them at a large scale, such that the impact is felt in this room as well. You have got to deal with the observation. There are compliance issues that have been raised as well in various audits, which we are attempting to address and have in the annual operational plan. And we are still wondering how we would be able to deal with these matters with the limited budget we have. I also want to address myself to an observation that has been made by the Honorable Van der Waal from the DA about the whole issue of the language in education being in the village. I think a point has been missed there, that what we are saying is we already have a language in education unit that addresses most of the concerns that have been raised here about indigenous languages in schools and so on. The current language in education policies that we have in the country have been as a result of our input as well. So what we are saying is that in that particular unit, we would also house our offices. That's the context in which the language and education unit is located in there. It is not a new establishment. It is a unit that we have that does quite a very important work at the present moment with the Department of Education. I thought I could just present that aspect. First, that when we look at the budget of PenSalp, as much as we have been intrigued by certain proposed projects and so on, it should not deduct, therefore, that the budget that we have is suitable, because we have presented you with the present and the future projection. And focusing on the present, we are unable to deliver most of the things, not just the dream, which is future, but the current, the compliance issues that we are required, an integrated HR and supply chain and finance system. It is a requirement, a compliance requirement. We are unable to deliver that because there is no money in this budget. So dreams aside, the current budget, on the basis of the current organogram of 58 members, does not address the needs of PENSAS and the concerns raised by members of this house. Thank you very much, CEO.
Over to you, Mr. Singh.
Thank you very much, CEO. Chairperson, honorable members, I just want to speak to you about, in terms of our auditing, we have to do a... Okay, can you hear me now? Okay. In terms of our auditing, we have to put in a thing called performance versus objectives in our annual report. Now, I just want to take you back to some figures. For the 2007-2008 financial year, PENSAS received 43.6 million rand. With the rollover amount, it took us to 51 million rand. We spent 51 million rand. Now, the Treasury calculated inflation as being 8.5%, because when you take 43.6 million and you add 8.5%, you get 47.4 million. But now, we spent last year 51 million. So if you have to have 8.5% on the 51 million spent to deliver exactly what we delivered last year, it actually comes to 55 million. Now, immediately, 55 million less 47 million, which we received this year, puts us immediately in an 8 million deficit. So in terms of our performance against objectives, our hands are basically tight. We cannot perform against what we have actually detailed in our annual operation plan, because immediately we will not be able to deliver exactly what you did last year due to the constraints placed on us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lopez, a follow-up and
my question is very, very simple. As you have established for this long-term part of us as a net part of your structure. I wanted to know, because they are important, how these structures, committees, are structured themselves in the province. My second question was that the Presidential Language Committee for 2008-2009 requested 40 million and you instead allocated them 3.8 million. Now, my concern is that we have observed with dismay that the National Arts Council has eschewed funding of the province. How is this, not for the NLDs, NLUs, but specifically for the Provincial Language Committee, this 3.8 to be distributed? And how is that done? That is my question. I was very pleased. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Bengo, followed by Honorable Fanafa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to humbly assure the CEO that it's part of our duty to unpack whatever is presented to us in such a manner that we understand it, to fulfill our mandate as public representatives, and we're not fighting anybody. Having said that, when you answered my question on the issue of the language hegemony, you sort of mix it up with the whole concept of the language village, project, which actually they don't have to go together, because that is totally separate. It's an attitudinal problem on the whole issue of the language hegemony. This language, village colossus, well, I don't know. The committee will have to talk to it. Personally, I think that it indeed will factor in an element of capitalism. Just look at the issue of the hotel. If you go to a hotel, you have to pay. And whoever built up that hotel must recoup whatever he or she actually aims to get out of it. You look at the office and corporate space. That's rental. You see, you look at the recreational area. You see, people who come there will have to pay. That's business. That's business. And theater, learning center, it's all business. Now, the question is, how do we factor in, a business in this kind of open environment? And we're not fighting with the concept on this. We're actually trying to understand, because one day we will be asked as members of this committee as to how did you allow this to happen? You see? And for instance, what kind of a hotel would that be? How many stars? And things like that. Will people pay or it be just a free hotel and sleep in and out, you see? I mean, that's the kind of a thing, you see, because at the end of it, as at a glance, this is just, a business venture, you see. Thanks.
Yeah, I think for the people of Panther before this committee for the first time, I must just say that you present to us, we have the right to ask you questions and comment in either which way we want to, and then we try and make this work. And if you don't want to do that, then obviously you should say so. And may I just say something when you talk about finances to the deputy CEO? Sir, if you don't have money in your budget to come to Cape Town, you don't have to come with your CEO. So that's one saving you could already have done to your 35, whatever range you've got. So don't come and argue these things. If you want to save money, there are always ways to save money in any business. So I don't call for that type of tone that you are trying to put me off, because you're not going to get it right. The issue is here to the CEO. Madame, the comparison I made was not to the provinces. The comparison I'm trying to make is to show you that if you are a person who has got some business knowledge, like I do, if a person puts this in front of me, it's a nice dream and it's nice to have if you can afford it. And I made a comparison to the national department, not to the provinces. I don't have to speak on the provinces. We work on national departments here only. So I am saying to you, your dream is too high. Bring your strategic plan into an implementable program. Don't do things in your strategic plan and in quarterly reports, which will be a compulsory thing in this department, now to this committee. Don't bring things to us that you cannot implement, because we have a fight every time. And then none of us can stand up at this committee in Parliament and actually fight your case for you, because they are too wide to fight for. I'm not going to stand up and fight for the budget on this figure here. It's laughable, because they aren't implementable. Your strategic plan must be able to implement it. It's many orders from the AG, and we really love. And by the way, to the deputy CEO, I'm actually a member of the Education Department Committee too, so I know where all the input on language comes to the Education Department. If you keep on doing this, we would say, why did you have a rollover? The Auditor General would say your strategic plans are not implementable. It happens. We work with 20 odd entities only in this committee. Your plans must be implementable. But the way they are written here, they are not implementable. You can't measure these because you don't have it coming and you will not have it in the next year. So it's not measurable. At all, in fact, but I will point this out to the minister myself in a question. And I must say, in previous annual reports, your spelling in your annual reports were the worst
I have ever seen in my life. Ever. So I hope that this annual report, which I have just started studying before our speech on the 6th of June, as a language body, that that is now corrected. Because there's no one here that cannot differ from me. It was the worst of all, every single entity and department that we've ever read. Now, for language department, that was that. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the Honourable Member. May I then start with the Honourable Lekgetlo's question. How are PLCs structured? First of all, the PLCs are structured according to a government gazette by the call for nomination is done by the MECs, the member of the executive committee of the province in arts and culture. And then they go through a process where there is a selection and elimination until we have a committee that is representative of the community, the language communities within that province. Once that is done, then PANSAP, you know, start to administer, you know, in terms of governing these structures. Now, the Provincial Language Committee has got different divisions within it. There is a subcommittee for language and education. There is a subcommittee for linguistic rights violation. There is a subcommittee for status planning. There is a subcommittee for interpreting and translation. Those are the clusters within the provincial language committee. Now, these subcommittees of the provincial language committee serve the different needs within the province and that is government departments and municipalities. And I'm glad that you have asked that question. It shows how inadequate the structure is. We only have got 13 members serving the entire province. So that is where we have the first challenge. In the new strategic plan, we have devised a way of having full-time members located within the provincial office of PANSAP, so that once the provincial committee has, you know, done its work, because they only sit for 4 meetings, once they've done their work in terms of advising what needs to be done, the members within the provincial offices can then do the day-to-day function. This is what is lacking at this point in time. That is why we are battling to meet our mandate. You ask for the 40 million that has been requested by them. It is in keeping with these services that they must do. They have got to go to business. The Honorable Member, Honorable Zulu, was saying, why are we not visible in the villages? In the, you know, we cannot do it because there's no money. Just for us to go to an Mbizo, we need to have the infrastructure for that. Fortunately, last year, we were able to get a relationship with the National House of Traditional Leaders. We are now going to be working hand in hand with them, but that will also require money to go and actually talk to the people. So that is how the provincial language committees work. We need to engage the language communities in terms of linguistic rights. We need to go and have campaigns there. We cannot do it because there is no money. So this question is very, very important. And thank you, sir. It's just to unpack what we have put in our strategic plan, that we need to have warm bodies in the provincial offices so that this work can be under. At this point in time, it's only meeting. They cannot do much because they just come 4 times a year, and then they just leave things hanging like that. It's only the provincial manager who's not mandated to do what they're supposed to do. Thank you, sir. Now, we move to the issue that was raised by Honorable Bengu, the issue of attitudinal problem. Attitudinal problem of the love of languages or disrespect of languages is very, very huge in South Africa. And it will take years, you know, to be solved. But I think at this point in time, we need to have Dr. Neville Alexander always talk about adding value to indigenous languages. Yes. So we are saying, but and I want to agree with this Deputy CEO, that let us not focus so much on the dream. Let us focus on the what is currently available, what we are doing right now. We have done a lot in terms of holding campaigns, say, to tell people about the value of indigenous languages. We have done the multilingualism award in terms of showing people what other people are doing with their languages. We have held mother tongue celebration just to show people how important mother tongues are. But it will take a long time to erase the damage that was meted out to the indigenous languages through colonization and apartheid. We have begun, and people are coming forward now to PANSAP to state their case, and we're very encouraged about that. It means we are beginning to be heard by the communities. When we come to the issue of the hotel, the office, the recreational, and theater, you are quite right, Sam. This is going to be, in a way, generate income. At this point in time, we are not saying we will generate the income. It is a government program. It is the ANC government program that there must be public-private partnerships for our people to generate income. At this point in time, what we are doing as a country, we are only paying hotels, other hotels. Why not, for instance, a hotel that is run by an empowerment group? Why don't we invite them to do it for us? Because anyway, when we invite people to come to PANSAP, they sleep in hotels. But you never question that. They sleep and they pay somebody. So why is it when we say, let us have a public-private partnership where people, when they come to us, they can be placed there, maybe at a cheaper cost? Because now the accommodation, the skyrocketing is out of control. We need to have something which we can, because we are a huge mandate. So it is in that light that we are saying, let us have a facility which is a private-public partnership where we can be able to do our thing. And now we move to the issue that was raised by the Honorable Van der Vaart in regard with the National Department. The National Department, which deals with language, deals with only one aspect of the language, which is the policy aspect. We deal with the entire issue of language in the whole country. Recently, Cabinet passed a decision to fund the literacy campaign at 6.6 billion. That is the importance that has been placed on literacy. But PANSAP does not only deal with literacy. PANSAP deals with policy, implementation, literacy, translation and interpreting, and everywhere. But we have been given this meager budget. Now, we want to the honorable members to compare this. How come the cabinet was able to pass 6.6 billion just for one, a little aspect of language, which is literacy? But for us, where we are dealing with the entire aspect of language, we are only giving 47 million. That is how we would like the members of this honorable committee to look at the issue of language within PANSAP. We are not dealing with a subset. We are dealing with the entire set. And the NMS is dealing with a very small set, which is just the development of policy. We're not dealing with that. We're dealing with the whole issue of language. So this is the way in which we'd like this House to approach this manner. It is very, very serious, and we would like you to support us in this one. And if it means we must have more meetings to actually unpack this, we'll gladly do so. Remember, we were given only 30 minutes to present this strategic plan. We can only talk within that, but we could actually make it clearer to you if you can actually invite us further for more deliberation. And Mr. Mbilini is going to address another issue.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Honorable, I'd like to ask also about structures like PLC. Sorry. Thank you very much. For the PLCs in the provinces, in terms of the Pensions Act, it says these committees must hold at least 4 meetings per annum. And then one meeting is costing Pensions for 140,000 for one. But according to the budget, we managed to allocate only 100,000 per PLCs. That's according to the available budget, which means now that the budget that we give for PLC for meetings, it doesn't cover even for one meeting. That is what is available at Pensab. And another thing was the thing of whether Pensab, the volume, I mean, the work, like when we're comparing with the department and the Pensab, the auditors, they keep on saying to us, you, Pensab, we are operating in Pretoria, and you are carrying the whole 48 or 49 million of South Africa, compared to like a department. Department got a provinces, in provinces, provincial department. But you are doing all your work. We are coming from different departments of work. But when we look, your work that you are doing at Pensab is much more than the one of the department. That used to be a comment that is coming from the auditor, as we are handling all the things of the province within the head office. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just want to offer my unconditional apologies for offending Honorable Van der Walt, even though at this point I don't realize how. I also do want, Chairperson, to request, because if Honorable Van der Walt indicates that she worked for the department, I mean she was in the department, in the committee that dealt with the language policy, language and education policy, thus she knows the people who have contributed. There's an insinuation there that Pensab did not contribute. And I think we ought to take offense to that. We have contributed to that, and such an insinuation is unfortunate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe we're not fighting. We're trying to build this country of ours together, which I believe you can see which problem really we're really faced with outside there when people are really shouting at us, crying at us. They say, you're ignoring us. I said that we're not ignoring you. We are really listening at you like now we're doing to you. You know that we're representing our people outside there. So there must be things happening, deliver whatever portion of the language or of the department really is addressing whatever problem. Well, let's work together, and then I believe that when we call you, sometimes we say, come tomorrow, you have to rush, because we're trying to address this problem. Unless if you have something to wind up, we are about to finish now.
I was interested to hear what the explanation is for the hotel. I'm going to have a hotel. I couldn't find the reason why something should be. Because I think Pansouth has a very clear mandate. And if Pansouth invites people and you are concerned about what they say, where they stay, I don't think you should make it your business, because next time this, the price of bread is going up, and I don't think you will establish a baker just to ensure that people are. Maybe we need to really look and
try to focus on what is your core responsibility and not. Yes, it is true. Government encourage public private partnership. I think that is a critical issue that your core responsibility. You have some challenges and maybe you should come from
and so you must understand that. So I don't think this is really going to the best one.
But anyway, now that
we have a new point, and we wish that the CEO, management, and the board itself, well, you know what the problems are. Some of the people in the board have been dead all along. Those of you in management have been there all along. You know what the problems are, the challenges that are facing themselves. And let's rather spend more time in trying to find solutions in addressing the problems than, doing the push and pull kind of thing along that.
Thank you very much.
Contributed what? That's what I'd say. I didn't say Santop did not. Chairperson, I just wanted to say something. I think about this village thing, which we now, it seems to be agreed, it's a dream. Santop job is not to the people, the converted, who knows about the seriousness. Your job mainly is to the people who do actually not know that they don't have a choice to choose their language. And those are the people on the ground. And those are the people you have to go and work with. The converted, the people like us, people in the language business, students, and that's fine. But you know, there are people out there that does not even know that they can go and lodge a complaint with you. And for that, you don't need a village, because those people can't get there. You have to get to them wherever they stay. That is the major thing that hasn't been achieved. And I can tell you, the University of Limpopo had a professor there who was teaching in Sivenda and, let's say Speri for that matter, for people to get a job in their own language. The government didn't give them money.
for that course. It was a 3 or 4 year course. You got money from the Ford Foundation. Those are the people you should go and help with their language rights and getting education in their languages, not building villages.
Madam Chair and the Honourable, the members of this Honourable Committee, I thank you very much for the contributions that have emanated from this discussion. And I humbly request this committee to assist us to get the additional budget. As the CFO has indicated, we are even underfunded from what we received last year. You know, if we were to do what we did last year, we will be we'll be having a shortfall of 8 million. That is our starting point. And that is going back to the DCO's contention that just look at the operations, the operational part. Yes, the dream we can put it aside. Let us just look at the operations. How can this honorable committee assist us? We made a bid to the National Treasury. And we got something which is actually shameful. How can we be given 47 million when the previous year was actually 51 million? So in other words, we are getting a deficit right away. So we would like this honorable committee to assist PANSA. The dream, yes, let us defer it. Let us focus on the operational plans as we have presented to you, so that we, as a unit here, as we can now say, at least the portfolio committee listen to us, and there is something that is going to come out of it. And I also would like to request, from this engagement with the portfolio committee, what else is going to happen? Because when you go to the National Treasury that requested us to present this strategic plan, you don't get a response. Then you go, where else must we go? We need to have this money or this budget this year, this financial year. And indeed, PANSALP has been making numerous appeals to this honorable committee. What other way can we actually get money to deliver on our mandate? What is the influence that this honorable committee can have for us to have what we need so that we can operate? Let us defer the dream. Let us just talk about the current. How can you assist us?
Thank you very much. I think your cry has fallen to fertile soil. We know that we'll be really pursuing them for you to deliver. Not promising that tomorrow, but we're going to talk to the department. Together with you, we'll be crying on the other side, and then we will try to sort of like asking or requesting for their assistance. We are there to help you. You are there to help us. It's not one-way traffic. It's a two-way traffic. That when we request, you deliver. Thank you very much. And then I think the secretary has something to tell us. We have already agreed that when we call you, don't panic. I think that members of parliament are really very harsh to us. We are building this country together for the sake of our country.
Thank you, Chair. Lunch will be served at Mark's Building Dining Hall, and everybody in this room is invited.
We are going there now.
Okay.